Good morning, and welcome to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard, and looks like, you know, the weather's been really nice. Spring is really here, and we might be actually experiencing one for the first time in a while. It seems like last year, if I remember correctly, we were kind of decent in March, and all of a sudden it was a little cold in April. Then all of a sudden, we just went to a quick warm-up, and it stayed warm, and it continued to get warm, and all of a sudden, we were in summer and it was hot and no spring, but looks like, Bob, this year we have a spring.
Spring has sprung.
Spring has sprung, and I'm liking the weather.
I'm loving it.
Temperatures are where I think they need to be. Things are warming up. We're seeing a lot of things burst into color.
Everything we've been talking about is out there. You know, the red buds are beautiful. Some are out a little further than others, just depending on how much sunlight and how the ground's warmed up. You know, those maybe facing south where the sun really beats on the ground all day, out a little bit further where it's warming them up. But, you know, they're good. The cherries.
What about the magnolias? They're holding on for a while.
Magnolias, you're jumping right in, aren't you?
I am, because some have been in bloom. Some have been holding on rather well. And usually that's not the case.
No.
Usually as soon as the magnolias start to show those beautiful colors, we get a cold snap, maybe a couple hard rains, and it's like the show's over.
Right. Well, we did have a big wind yesterday. Wasn't that a little weird how quickly those storms came through? And I know they were talking there might be a couple tornado areas. Did you see? Did we actually officially confirm whether there was any?
Looked like one in my backyard.
Yeah, I know. That's for sure. But, you know, that was kind of crazy.
A lot of trees down, a lot of damage yesterday, and just in isolated areas, you know, especially I know over in Taylor Mill, there was some wind damage.
Was there? Yeah, I thought they said Erlanger. Somebody had said, or I thought I saw on Facebook somewhere, Batavia had a wind gust up near 90. So, I mean, there was some crazy winds, and man, but it blew through fast. I mean, it was just one of those, I got an alert on my phone, it turned on the weather, kind of was home for that about 7:30-ish when it came through around my house. Got, you know, it was beautiful sun, warm. I walked outside, and then all of a sudden you look up, the clouds are gray, the wind's blowing, you can't see anything, and 2 minutes later, it was done.
When I left the house, you could see areas where there's a little bit of sunshine, you know, peeking through the clouds. And you could see it starting to get a little bit dark towards the southwest. And I thought, you know, I know they were calling for some inclement weather, especially down there near the Speedway.
Yep.
They said that there was some possible wind damage and tornadoes, you know, maybe forming or maybe touching down. I'm thinking, you know what? Am I going to work early? Am I batting down the hatches because we left the vents open? And as soon as I got down the hill, got close to work, it just let loose.
Yeah, it did.
I mean, it was raining sideways. It was windy. And
lasted about 3 minutes, didn't it?
It was not long. But this, you know, there's a couple things here. You know, with wind damage like that and the ash trees that are still kind of upright.
Oh, yeah.
That are slowly decaying. They're starting to break off at various points, you know, throughout their branching structure.
You
remember
know,
last year where, was it the Fort Wright Civic Club where one of the ash trees?
The old ash trees fell.
Had fallen and injured or killed somebody, I think.
I might have been.
That's how dangerous that is.
I know there's been a few out there. And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because we really should discuss that. You know, if you're in your yard or near areas where you're at or you're walking through your woods and you've got some of those ash trees, they've been dead for a while. So they're really getting brittle. And I'm seeing every time there's a wind damage, you know, there's a lot of problems. I think it happened at your house, didn't it? Was that last week or a couple weeks ago where it fell into the other tree?
The last two windstorms. And my tree guy keeps telling me, I met him yesterday. He's like, Tony, man, that's pretty dangerous up there. I just don't feel comfortable with it. I'm like, Bill, I have faith in you, buddy. Make it happen. Well, you know, this won't take a long time, Tony. Bill.
I got faith in you.
Yeah. Well, my problem is that you can't get equipment down into my backyard.
Right.
So there are some limitations. But going back to what you were just saying, have somebody come out, a certified arborist, have somebody come out and evaluate those situations.
Yes.
If you have some of those trees, we're talking particularly about the ash tree that has been dead for a number of years, they're starting to break apart.
Yes,
and
they are.
It's becoming dangerous. There's property damage. There's all of that stuff. Yesterday when I left, everything was calm up in where I live. I drove back home later in the day, and my neighbor, you can see where one of the trees that was in his backyard, just it was uprooted. It was not dead. It was uprooted. leaning right on the corner of his rooftop.
Oh, wow.
So I called him up, like, Russ, what's going on? I already know.
Got bad news.
Yeah, he was out of town.
Unaware, oh, he was. So unaware. He was heading out of town, and a tree had fallen on the house?
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible.
I know, isn't it?
You know, and that's where, you know, sometimes I understand budgets are tight, and you don't have some extra funds maybe to go ahead and get that tree out. But you will never, ever, ever, ever forgive yourself if something really bad happens or tragic happens.
Oh, I agree.
When you could have done something about it. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. You know, if you have any doubt, we've had some storms, and we're going to have more this spring. Might have some tonight. I mean, I know they're calling for 100% chance of rain and some pop-up thunderstorms. Yesterday they said, you know, with the storms coming through, just be aware. Not sure exactly what's coming through tomorrow night, but this was yesterday, so tonight would be. Mm-hmm. But might be some big storms coming. So, you know, just keep an eye on it. Today's supposed to be a great day. It's supposed to be mostly cloudy, is what they're saying. About high 70, though. You know, those temperatures are pretty good.
And, you know, this is the kind of weather, too, that with that little bit of cloud cover, I know we all want sunshine, but we've had some good sunshine here as of lately. But a little bit of cloud cover, it makes getting out and doing things in the landscape or in the garden pleasurable.
I mean,
you know, you're not working up a huge sweat by any means. It's comfortable outside, short sleeve shirt. It just makes some of those chores that we still have yet to do a lot easier, I think.
Well, I mean,
more enjoyable, so to speak.
Yeah, this morning it's 46 degrees, but, you know, I'm in a short sleeve shirt. You know, it feels pretty decent outside. It's chilly. If you're one that doesn't like being cold, I'd definitely wear a light jacket on your way out today. And if you're heading to a sporting event to sit with the kids, you don't like it real cold, you might take something with you. But it feels pretty good out there.
Now, you're starting to sound like my wife. She always takes something with her, even in the middle of summer.
We go into a restaurant. I was going to say, it's 85, and she's wearing a sweatshirt.
It's always cold in there, Tony. I need my sweatshirt. I need a sweater.
Oh, my neighbor's that way, man. She's that way. It could be 110 degrees, and she's in jeans and a sweatshirt.
Take your chances. Go out there without a jacket. See how you fare.
Yeah,
pull it off.
You know, but there's some other things going on today. We want to mention that McCabe Lumber Annual Deck Expo is today.
You know what? Somebody might need, they may be in need of repairing a deck with all that stuff yesterday.
Well, at McCabe's, you know, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., you know, they got special one-day discounts. They've got a bunch of manufacturers on hand to really answer questions. So if you're really looking for a deck, you know, today might be a day to stop by. Apparently, they have Queen City Sausage out there doing some food. You can register to win a Trex outdoor furniture or even a grill.
The Traeger grill. Yeah. I like the grill. So I would be out there trying to win that bad Oscar.
I like the grill. But McCabe's Lumber in Loveland, their annual deck expo is today. So definitely if you get a chance and you're out that way, check them out.
You know, I wish I could make that because I have a lot of questions about decking materials. That would be a good show topic. Or a couple of segments here about some of the decking materials.
Oh, definitely. There's, you know, I've had some work experience working with Trex and different brands. I got to admit, I know they're expensive, but man, the convenience, the Trex product that I worked with, I thought was just exceptional, to be honest with you. I really did. It's pricey. Don't get me wrong.
You know, I have a couple of questions and I hear various, you know, things from homeowners who say they really love it. Some say, hey, I still have to clean it just as often, if not more often.
I will tell you this.
Than wooden decks, that it can be hot.
Yes.
To walk on barefoot. You know, I don't know, you know, what are the pros and really the cons.
Well, we built one Trex deck, if you remember from the Home and Garden Show, and it was like a charcoal gray, almost black, was the Trex color.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely gorgeous. It will get hot. If you're in sun, it's probably not the color to choose because it really absorbs the heat. But what I loved is I had some of my guys painting the structure. Well, the structure was white. And I love my guys. They're great at landscaping. Maybe not the greatest painters ever because there was some splatter that had fallen. White paint on this basically black decking.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, no. I'm taking this down to the Home and Garden Show. Here's all these white spots. You could clearly tell what it was. So what I did is I moved it outside, took a pressure washer. It took it right off.
Really?
Couldn't believe it.
Well, there's an advantage right there.
I mean, there was mud on it. You know, sometimes you get dirt on a deck. You can pressure wash it off. But, man, I'll tell you what, you just pressure washed it, and that thing was clean as can be.
Yeah.
So that was my experience with it.
I was just curious. So even more reason to go out to the McCabe's Lumber Deck Expo today.
Absolutely.
Oh, we also have a great show lined up for you this morning. Always every Saturday morning, we'll have What Plant Am I? And our plant of the week is also a big hit. And also, we have a special guest, and we're just going to tease you for a while, but this is something you definitely want to hang out and with us in the 8 o'clock hour.
Should we give him a clue?
No, it's classified still. I don't think we need to. It's classified.
We can't say he's from one of the greatest treasures in Cincinnati?
Oh, okay, there you go. I'm in.
I mean, it is probably one of the greatest treasures of Cincinnati, wouldn't you agree?
And it's been around for a long time.
Yep, so there you go. Now you just gave two clues. I was only going to do one.
Well, it's classified, and we'll keep letting some of this leak out.
We want to remind people, get to the Facebook page, In and Around the House. Check it out. What plant am I? We've had a lot of guesses. You know, we encourage our listeners to get there, take their guess, see what it is. It is a beautiful one. I did have to post that I thought Tony made this one too easy.
Well, perhaps, and so be it, but I was out delivering the other day. And I went by this tree on my way to a delivery, and I thought, I have to pull off the side of the road, take a picture of her, and post her. And that's what I did.
So get out there to our website and check it out and see if you can figure out what it is. And in the 7 o'clock hour, we will talk about it and see if you're correct.
Yeah, so we got to take a quick break. When we come back out of the break, we're going to talk about a couple of Facebook questions, kind of get things kicked off this morning. And one of those questions has to do with weed products, getting rid of weeds with herbicides. 749-B105, In and Around the House. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Wirtz with Bob Bard. And before we went into the break, we were just mentioning we're going to talk a little bit about weed control with herbicides and so forth. And we had a great question the other day on our Facebook page. And this is really a valid question. And this is a great way to stay in touch with us. In addition to, you can certainly send us an email too at inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. We'll do our best to get back to you as quickly as possible. And also a great way to stay in touch with us is via our Facebook page, which is what we're going to talk about in just 1 second. And also, if you want to catch a past show, Alex does a great job keeping our podcast up to date, and you can certainly do that as well. But Bob, you know, with spring right in the, you know, right here in the palm of our hand, so to speak, we're starting to see this huge explosion with weeds and various things taking place in the lawn, in the landscape beds, and just throughout. And Ken, if I say your last name correctly, Inginger, or if I don't want to butcher that, but he had a great question here, Bob. He had asked us, what is the difference between Fertilume's Weed Out with Crabgrass Killer, Weed Free Zone, Weed Out Pro, Weed Out Lawn, Weed Killer, and other Fertilume weed products?
Well, there's a lot of different ones.
That's a great question. It is.
And I'm really glad he brought it up because I didn't, you know, we always talk about it and we try to explain it, but I don't know if you and I have ever explained the differences.
Well, here we are. We're going to roll with it.
We're going to run.
We're going to run with it. Okay. So let's start with the first one, Weed Out with Crabgrass Killer.
Mm-hmm.
This is, to me, obviously it has two elements about it. You know, it will get rid of some weeds, and it also will go after crabgrass.
Correct.
The weed element to this, Weed Out with Crabgrass Killer, it contains a very popular active ingredient called 2,4-D.
And that is almost an all weed killer.
Yes.
Sprays. Or even great. That's almost in every single one.
Yeah. 2,4-D. For the most part, no matter what company that we're mm-hmm. talking about. In this particular product, the 2,4-D percentage is like 6.42%.
Right.
You know, it's adequate. You know, it goes after most everything. But I will say this, my opinion is that if you're trying to get rid of some tougher things, more of the perennial type of weeds that we're trying to get rid of, such as wild violets, you know, even sometimes clover,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes wild onions, Creeping Charlie, for example, is a great one just to point out. It might take you a few applications, but it wouldn't be my go-to in that particular situation. It's adequate. It's not as strong as what we're going to talk about when we talk about weed-free zone. But it will go after crabgrass. But for the most part, when crabgrass is still in its young stage, it's not fully developed is when it's at its best going after crabgrass.
You know, another thing to remember about the Fertilome weed out with crabgrass is it typically works better in a little bit warmer temperatures than the weed-free zone. You know, you'll see a lot of different weed killers people might go get right now, and they'll get them maybe from one of the box stores. They won't come to you or you know, to some of the independent garden centers that we always talk about. And this is a good example because they'll go, they see something on the shelf, they grab it, they go spray it. But on this particular case, if it's colder, the weed out with crabgrass killer doesn't work as well as the weed-free zone.
Not at all. Not in the least.
It doesn't like the cold night temperatures. And it'll still work, but just not as well as it should. And then you're not going to have the results that you want. So to me personally, this weed out with crabgrass killer, I think, is a good one, but it's more summer, fall sprays. Just my opinion.
I agree. Because the ideal temperatures really to go after various weeds and so forth in the lawn or in the landscape beds is between the temperatures of 65 degrees and 85 degrees. Now, this also comes into play, too. Typically, when we see crabgrass issues in the lawn, it's when it's older, it's established, it's been growing for some time. And by that time, where are we? We're above 85 degrees.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Crabgrass kind of shuts down to a degree where it's not going to be taking these products in effectively to get rid of it.
Right.
So these temperatures are very, very important. That range is so important to your success. So always try your best to pay attention
Absolutely.
To that.
Absolutely. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking about Fertilome's weed out with crabgrass killer. It comes in a liquid spray. I believe it also comes in a granular as well, doesn't it?
Oh, it could.
Okay.
I'm more for the concentrates, the liquid sprays.
Okay.
Because of the flexibility using those.
Right.
So I don't use a lot of the granular products. Certainly, you can use the granular products, and we'll touch base on that, and I'll tell you why I'm not in favor of those, and that will just come a little bit later here in this morning's program. But you know, also the product that's in weed out with crabgrass killer is one called quinclorac.
Yes.
Now. It's okay. It works. But there's another one out there called Phenoxaprop.
Yes.
That is even a little better. But, you know, right. Just look for those. And that's why it's important when you're out at your local nurseries and garden centers. They are the experts. They are the pros. They are the ones that are going to give you the most amount of information for you to be successful getting rid of what you need to get rid of.
And remember, whenever you're spraying any weed killer, herbicide, you're putting a pre-emergent down, check the labels. Because if you're spraying, let's say, for example, maybe you're spraying Bermuda grass, and you think, oh, that's a weed, you know, but technically it's a grass, but it does kind of play itself off as a weed in our lawns. If you go and grab weed out with crabgrass killer, it's probably not going to work, but it's also not on that label. So if it's not on the label, you can pretty much sure it doesn't work. Because if it's on the label, they can put it on there because it had some sort of success. Maybe not even 100%, but it had some success killing or damaging that weed. So just keep in mind, whenever you're spraying a weed killer, if you know what you're spraying, get something for that.
That's what's most important.
Yeah, don't buy just anything.
This is a very in-depth topic. We got to take another quick break. We're going to continue this topic. When we come back out of the break, we're going to talk about weed-free zone. And, Kim, we're going to continue this discussion. Hopefully, I know that you said that, some people say they're always driving in the mornings. They don't get an opportunity to call in. But that's what this show's all about. And we'll continue this when we come out of the break. 749-B105, In and Around the House. Welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard. So it'll be a nice weekend here. Maybe some showers later on today, PM showers, but for the most part, rather comfortable, 70 degrees, and a great weekend to get out to your local garden center or nursery and just see what's going on. A lot of new stuff's arriving daily, and we're getting ramped up, and we're excited, and this is our time of the year to help you achieve and set out and take care of some of those projects that you're wanting to do or implement this year for the very first time, or even if you're revamping an older existing landscape. Now's the time to start thinking about it. That's for sure. And also, before we went into the break, we were just talking about some of our Facebook questions, and we're talking about various types of weed killers from Fertilome. And the other one we want to touch base on is weed-free zone.
Which is one of your favorites.
It's one of my favorites because, a couple of reasons. It's a little stronger than Weed Out with Crabgrass Killer in it. Yep. The 2,4-D is a little higher concentrated amount. And there's some other elements that are in this particular makeup that helps get rid of some of those tougher to get rid of perennial weeds. Like, you know, like I said, like wild violets. And I kind of really think wild violets are kind of, they're not too bad. I like their appearance.
They're pretty.
But it does not take them long to just keep multiplying, and all of a sudden they're choking out part of your lawn.
Well, and this one, you know, gets white clover, wild geranium. This is the one that's getting also the, I believe, the henbit and helping with the bittercress as well, which is out right now.
It does all of it.
Yeah.
You know,
there's
you
like
know,
88 the weed out, weeds.
The Weed Out will go after some of those easier to get rid of weeds. Mm-hmm. But this is the one that really, you know, goes after the wild onions, you know, the Creeping Charlie and so forth.
But what gives its advantage the earlier in the spring?
It's the cooler, it's the cooler temperatures. You're able to start using it, according to Fertilume, when the temperature ranges are in the 40-degree range. I kind of like it more around 50 or so. That's just me personally. And it gives you that early advantage where you can get a jump on these weeds, where some of the other products, you can't do that because of the temperatures.
Right.
And it also helps you later in the year, in the fall, to get rid of some of these pesky weeds when, you know, things are starting to change. You know, the weeds are starting to translocate their energy, the perennial weeds I'm speaking of. They're starting to translocate their energy back down into the root system to go through a long winter's nap. And that whole translocation, you know, process helps take that product in. So using this later in the season when it's cooler is to your advantage.
I think this one works better in cooler temperatures, even better than
it
does
the spring.
In the middle of summer. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not using this one in the middle of summer because it's hotter. And I tend to think, at least I've had some experience where if you spray it on a 90-degree day, it burns a little bit. You know, you could see a little bit of discoloration in your lawn as well. Nothing to be too worried about because it will recover, but you will have a few issues with weed-free zone spraying it when it's really, really hot, which most weed killers you do.
And I also want to put some emphasis on this, that these products that we're talking about, for the most part, they're really easy to apply. And you follow the labels, you know, for the most part, things are safe. Just, you know, be aware of, you know, what's going on. We also don't want to, you know, harm our beneficials, the pollinators and so forth. So spray responsibly.
Right now, there's a few dandelions popping up. That's something for the bees to get to. You know, clover is one of those. A lot of people don't like clover in their yard, but man, the bees love clover. So you got to remember that, you know, and if you are going to spray, let's spray while they're not as active. You know, so if you notice that there's a bunch of bees flying all around, why don't we wait on that just a little bit and be a little bit responsible so that way if we all can do a little bit, nobody has to do a lot. So
I agree. And, you know, and think about this too. Once you have your lawn whipped into shape, think about it. You're not going to have to use as many products.
What is the best way to prevent weeds?
Have a thick, healthy lawn.
Have a thick, healthy lawn.
And then therefore you're using less products and in the long run, it's a lot safer.
So let's talk just for a second. I'm going to be the consumer again. We did this a few weeks ago where I was the consumer and you were the expert.
Got it.
Okay. Well, I got the question. You don't even know what I'm going to ask.
So, I think I do. Go ahead.
You do?
Go ahead.
All right. So I put down my 3-step and I'm still getting a few weeds. Why is that? What? And then how come I got a spray to kill weeds too?
Well, the reason being is because what you're being plagued with more than likely germinated late last year, you know, late in the season, in the fall season, as the pre-emergent product has started to wear thin and it became null and void, so to speak.
Right.
You know, this product, the prodiamine, that's your pre-emergent in the first step from Fertilume, it'll give you a good solid 5 months protection. But also what comes into play in between when you apply it and late in the season, how often do you water or how much precipitation have we received throughout the course of the season? So all those things in combination come into play. And, you know, the more you water, the more it rains, the quicker the barrier starts to fade away.
Yeah.
So a lot of times these are things that snuck into the lawn late in the season.
Right. And that's what I want. The reason I brought the question up is because I get that fairly often in the garden center. I know all our other in and around the house guys do as well. You know, I put the stuff down and I still have weeds. Well, you're still going to have any perennial weed that is in the ground that has a root is still going to come up no matter what pre-emergent you get down. It's going to come up.
And it could have already been there when you put the pre-emergent down.
It probably was.
Sure. It's a pre-emergent. It will only prevent things from germinating and getting in.
Right.
Up for a certain time period.
Exactly. And that's what we want to restress, because we, you know, if you haven't put your three-step down, this is a good weekend to do it. It's supposed to rain some tonight. Go ahead and get it down, get it activated. The lawns are waking up, so they could use a little bit of food as well. It's kind of like getting your vitamins in, you know. It's kind of nice for the lawn. They need their food as well. They need to be fed. They're waking up. But they, you got to remember, when you put this down, you're still going to have to spray some weeds. And that's where we talk about sometimes the Weed Out Plus, or the three-step plus.
Right.
And the three-step plus basically adds weed-free zone to that, and that's
that
the
whole,
plus part.
Yeah, to that whole approach. And I, that's where I like the concentrates, the liquids, and so forth, because it's a lot more flexible to use those, mix those. You know, we were talking about the granular approach with you know, weed-out products, but a lot of times you don't always want to necessarily fertilize and use a weed-out product in the same approach or same application. You know, there are weed out products that are just by themselves that come in a granular form, but sometimes you don't have to spray the whole lawn.
That's
you just have certain areas. So that's where I think the liquids are a lot more flexible and give you that ability just to mix a little bit or just go out and get that one isolated area.
I think that's a great point, because when you buy, you know, sometimes, and there's a four-step program out there that has step two, and it's more weed killer we're spreading on the whole lawn, you know. And I know Fertilum carries those products too, but I don't like putting that much weed killer on our lawns. One, it's runoff. It's getting in our water systems. You know, to me, it's just not as responsible. And I think especially you and I being in the industry and getting to talk every Saturday, we need to talk about the responsibility. And I think that brings up a good point. If you have some weeds and you want to kill them, buy the concentrate. It's a little more work on your part because you got to mix it with water. You got to carry a tank sprayer around, or you got to take a trigger bottle and you got to spray it directly on the weed. But it usually disappears a lot faster. It's not going to get into the water systems. It's not going to do a lot of the
other. And even better, think about this. If you have pets, usually they're out on the lawn. What do? They're always licking their paws. Okay.
Right.
And so if you're just spraying a small isolated area, that's less product that you really used out on the lawn. A lot safer for pets, in my opinion. So I think it's just a better approach, and it's just more effective. Then you can come back if you have to spray a second time.
Right.
That's a benefit, because you're not going to spread another application of.
Right.
It's, you know, like, it's just more, it's economically better, and it's a lot cleaner.
A lot better for the environment. But the weed killer that's a granular that you put down in step two for some of these other products, you put it down on the whole lawn. You're wasting product. You're just wasting your money, because you don't have weeds everywhere in your lawn. If you want to use it, fine. Everybody gets to do whatever they want. I'm not gonna judge you for it. It's your deal. But really, we love, and I know you just said it, that's why we love the liquids. You can mix a small amount, spray only what you need to spray, kill the weeds you need to, and you're not spraying everything. Plus, if your kids go play on it, you know, just a little area, so it's safer for them too.
So, Ken, hope that was helpful and beneficial. And for most, if you're kind of were questioning or, you know, wanting a little bit more insight as to what herbicides are all about, you know, that's kind of it. If you have any other questions, feel free to give us a call. We're going to take another quick break, and when we come back out of the break, we're going to go to Chris Bradley from our Facebook, and he had a question too about a shrub. 749-B105 in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works, alongside me with Bob Bard, and we're just covering a lot of ground thus far this morning, talking about weeds and so forth. And while we were on that note in the break, Debbie has called in, and she has a question about some things. Good morning, Debbie. How are you?
Good morning. Good. My question is, in my flower bed, I have these annoying wild onions that seem to come up every year, and I'm sitting in that flower bed for hours picking those onions out of there, and I'm not always getting the root of it. I'm always getting the tops of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so do I just dig down with like a spoon or something to try to get them out?
Yeah. One of those hand trowels, you know, that's a great way to get dig down a little deeper and get underneath and get everything all in one big clump. You can certainly approach it that way. You know, wild onions, you know, I really don't know how they sneak in there and all of a sudden they're multiplying like they can. They're a little difficult to get rid of, and especially if you're spraying something on them, because they have that waxy blade. And when you spray that waxy blade, Debbie, it just repels off and it just kind of laughs at us and like, hey, you better throw something at me better than that. So usually,
well, I really don't spray anything on
yeah,
them.
No, I understand. And, you know, in your situation, I could tell when you said dig them out, that would be best suited if you want to take that approach. Like I said, get a hand trowel and dig in a little deeper and get underneath it and work it out that way. But I want to just go back to if someone chooses to spray, you know, it's beneficial to bruise the onions, and that's opening them up, wounding the onions, and then spray them. The product gets in it a lot more better or more efficiently, and it works.
Yeah, but there are some of them are really close to some of my flowers that
right.
are starting to bloom now. So
a natural way to try to help that is, believe it or not, you actually want to water your flower bed. Get it moist, because when the ground is really hard and the soil is kind of dry, it's much harder to pull the right. onion out and get the little nut that's on the bottom. And if you water it, it makes the soil a little softer. Then you sometimes can pull them, but at least take one of those little garden weasels or little hand trowels or a spoon, whatever you got. And with a little bit of moisture in the soil, it'll make it easier to pull it out, because every time you break it, they tend to multiply.
Yes, because they did. I mean, I just spent a couple weeks ago to getting them all out of there,
mm-hmm.
and they're doubled probably what I pulled out.
Yeah, so try adding some moisture, or if it rains tonight and tomorrow, and you can get out maybe tomorrow evening if it stops. When the ground is moist, it's much easier to pull weeds in general.
Right.
But next to your desirables or your good plants or any of your perennials where you have wild onions, you need to put some moisture in the soil, and then that way you can go out there and have a little bit easier time pulling them. Now, you don't need it so wet that it's just mud, because that's hard to work with. But you do want some moisture in the soil, and that might be just a natural way without having to use any weed killers of getting rid of some of those.
Okay, great. Thank you guys so much.
You're
Thank
welcome,
you
Debbie. Have a good weekend. No, and that's a great point. And she just said, too, she has desirables. Yeah, you certainly don't want to get anything on your desirables.
Right.
Another approach when you have things that are close by proximity-wise, you don't want to get any overspray on or any of the product if you're using products. You know, you can wear a pair of heavy-duty rubber gloves,
yep.
get a sponge, and wipe it on.
Yep.
Therefore, you're not getting any overspray on something that you don't want to injure.
You know, sometimes
wild onions are tough.
Take a little styrofoam cup, cut the bottom out. Put the little cup over top of the weed if it's close to one of your desirables and you need to spray it. So it acts like a little cone around it. Kind of give it a good little spray, kill the weed, let it dry, pull the cup up. I know it sounds a little funny, but that's an easy way to do it.
We had a caller a couple weeks ago that said that they used some sort of, was it like a 2-liter?
They used a 2-liter bottle and cut the bottom out and then taped it to the wand of their sprayer. You know, if it's also near a taller plant, you could take cardboard. Have a little piece of cardboard, protect your plant, spray the weed, drop the cardboard on top of the weed, and just let it sit there for a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and then that'll get it. I'd be interested. I've heard rumors, and I don't know if any of our listeners are out there have ever tried it, but I've heard rumors that on wild onions, and I've never had any luck with it, that if you just continually cut them to the ground, 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 you got to stay persistent, that eventually they'll almost die off. Because they're not getting any photosynthesis or any nutrients that they need. It's an organic way of doing it, obviously, because there's no chemicals. But I don't know if it works. I've just heard rumors about it.
What about if you were to cut them to the ground and use horticultural vinegar, a mix of some sort?
I don't know. Like I said, if any of our listeners have tried anything natural for wild onions, I'd love to hear about it. I mean, I've used Kilzol, and I bruised them, and it worked.
And I've used Weed Free Zone successfully.
Have you?
Yeah, bruising them, and it worked. First, yeah, one application.
One time.
Now,
huh?
Sometimes you might need two, but yeah, it was one application. I did it myself. I know that it worked, but I did bruise those.
And then the watering, I've had customers tell me, look, I've got all this ground cover. I can't spray the wild onions in my ground cover. I don't want to kill my ground cover. So we turned loose the sprinkler, ran it for a few hours, got the area wet. You know, the next day kind of came out and started pulling some of the weeds. The easy ones pulled out. Some of the harder ones, they actually had to take a little garden, you know, the little garden weeder. That's mm-hmm. the little short one with a little tiny metal end, almost kind of like a really super small spade that's like 1 inch across. And you kind of dig underneath them, and as you pull, you can get them out. But that was a way that I did have success if you don't want to go to guns and spray.
There you have it.
How about that?
I'm in. So we have another question, too, on our Facebook page from Chris Bradley. Why is my shrub losing needles? And he sent in a photo, and that was really helpful. A little difficult to tell because it's off in the distance to identify the type of shrub that he's having a problem with. But, you know, for the most part, you know, perhaps if it's a spruce of some sort or what mm-hmm. have you, a couple of things could be going on, especially in the spruce world. There's a disease called needle cast disease. And a lot of times late in the year is when you start seeing that needle cast starting to take place where it's just dropping needles mm-hmm. underneath. And that's a disease called rhizosphera. That could be one of the issues. The other one might be there's been some issues with spider mite activity in the past. I doubt if you're having it now at this moment.
Yeah, it'd be a little early for spider mites.
Yeah,
it'd
be
right
a little
now.
Early. But like last year, you may have been having some issues with spider mite. So in this particular situation, Chris, my suggestion is to you to take a couple of samples, you know, something that has needles on it, something without the needles, and even pick some of those needles up that are underneath. Take it to your local extension office and have them send it off to be analyzed to see if it's any of those two. It can be easily determined if it is, and then we can take the appropriate action.
You know, and I just, Chris, if you happen to be still be listening, if there's any way to get a little close-up of the picture of the plant that you don't want us, that you're having trouble with, it's hard for us to see in that picture exactly what that plant is. And I think if he were to get a close-up, it would really help us out just a little bit. Because it is that round shape. It's got needles kind of in the mulch, but it's still really mm-hmm. hard for us to see right now. So,
and you know what's really important with that? When you see that needle cast or you see that debris underneath the shrub, mm-hmm. is to get that out of there, dispose of it, discard of it, throw it away. Don't even put it in your compost pile by any means. That is how those diseases, they just lay there. They harbor themselves, you know, right. and they'll just rear their ugly faces the following season, especially when it rains. The rain pelts the soil surface, gets that spore moving upward, and you're starting that whole cycle all over again.
Right. And, you know, the one thing to remember, sometimes this isn't even a bug. Like in the picture, if people go to our Facebook page and kind of take a look, they can see the post. You know, there's a Taxus U to the right side. You know, and it's got a little yellow to it as well, which maybe means that the soil may be a little, the pH may be off just a little bit, or, you know, maybe that bed's holding some moisture, you know, because sometimes yews don't usually die from drought. Usually a Taxus yew will be too wet. Wouldn't you agree or not?
Yeah, it depends. It could also be too dry for a long, lengthy period of time.
It could be. Yeah,
there's a lot of things that come into play there. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
So, you know, take samples to your local extension office. That's where I would start. Have that analyzed and
does it say where he's from, where he lives?
No,
it doesn't. Uh-uh. Yeah, Chris, so, you know, whoever is also your local independent garden center, take a picture that's closer up. You can send us a picture, but also you could take a cutting into them. You know, if you're on the north side, go see Jim up there at Lakeview. You know, if you're out on the east, you can come see me or see Burger Farm. You know, down south, you can go see Maddox or Baton's Nursery or stop in and see Tony. You know, there's a lot of good garden centers out there that probably can help you out identify that as well. But next time, if you could just get us a little closer picture, that would be helpful.
That's always a benefit. You know, pictures are worth 1,000 words. So did you see the one about what was kind of coming up in somebody's garden? An unexpected kind of weed
Dayton,
of some sort.
Dayton Garden Club.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another one. It was just kind of hard to tell this early from the picture. What is that? So.
And that was, it's hard to really tell. It looks like something young that was just starting to sprout up and make its way in between whatever was growing there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff going on, actually. But it kind of looked like maybe a horse chestnut. It's hard to say. But, you know, that's when you kind of get down close to the soil surface. When something's sprouting like that, if you can pull it out, sometimes you'll see those seed casings, so to speak, kind of mm-hmm. gives you an idea, just something that's volunteered. The sooner you can pull those out, work those out, the easier it's going to be. A lot of times it's difficult to get those things out.
It really is.
And going back to what you said a moment ago, too, a little bit of water goes a long way, kind of loosens the soil up and makes it easier to work
right.
and dig around it. So.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, once again, this is a great way for our listeners to contact or get a hold of us if they need to. They can get to in and around the house. Also, don't be afraid to call in. We love to have calls. So if we're discussing something and you have a remedy that's worked for you, we'd love to hear about it. You know, definitely we encourage our listeners to be part of the conversation.
Yep, that's for sure. And we have to take another quick break. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. You know, when we come back out of the break, let's talk about kind of like what's going on at the garden centers, what you might see in color. There's a lot of stuff starting to show up. We'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Wirth with Bob Bard, and if you're just getting up and you're joining us, welcome, and thank you for bringing us into the room there with you via radio. And today it's going to be a little cloudy, somewhat decent, you know, from a temperature standpoint, maybe some PM showers later. And I think it might carry over even into tomorrow as far as that goes. But we've been blessed with some really nice weather, and obviously spring is here. The temperatures have been very favorable. I'm excited. I know you've been excited, Bob. We've all been busy in the garden center world. And take the opportunity today to get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. And remember, you know, keep it local. Every time you spend a dollar, on average, 67 cents of that dollar stays into the local economy. That's so, so important. And this is not to beat up on any of the big box guys, but not as much when you buy there. So, and it's not just in the garden center world. It's in all the worlds of those who are in the retail.
Well, not to mention the greenhouses, you know, are really waking up. The flowers are incredible. The color's really coming. You're going to want to buy and almost start planting. And we're going to caution you there. You know, we still got a couple cold temperatures are guaranteed coming. We're in Cincinnati and it's April. There'll be a couple cooler nights. But, you know, if there's some specialty annuals that you really like and you're afraid you may not be able to find, it is okay to go ahead and purchase those. You just may have to move them in and outside. Just don't plant them yet.
Things are looking good, so get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and check it out and see what's new and see what's been coming in.
Are you excited about anything?
Yeah, I'm excited about a lot of stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What about annual-wise? Is there anything out there?
But before I tell you I'm excited about whatever it is, we're going to get with Ann.
Oh, okay, we got a phone call.
Yeah, we have Ann on the line this morning with us. Ann, where are you calling from? Good morning.
I'm from Villa Hills, Kentucky.
Oh, okay. You're just right in our neck of the woods. I was out, I was in your area the other day, and I had to pull off to the side off of Amsterdam Road and took a photograph of our What Plant Am I?
Oh.
So we'll talk about that. You might even know where that is.
I do.
Do you get on Facebook occasionally?
Occasionally.
Well, check it out. You might recognize it.
Okay.
So what can we help you with?
Well, I have an oak leaf hydrangea, and every year it's beautiful in the spring. And about August, it gets all brown, and, you know, it looks like it's about done. But the other hydrangeas in the neighborhood, they look fine. Now, it gets full sun all the time. So I just wondered if you have any ideas. Is it too much sun? Is it the variety?
It could be. Would you happen to know the variety of the oak leaf?
I do not. It's white. I mean, it's white little flowers.
Yeah, white bloom. Yeah. And it has that big oak leaf that's very distinguishable. It turns that nice burgundy color in the fall. Bark exfoliating on the branching of the hydrangea itself? It kind of peels? Yeah. Okay.
How old is the plant and how big is it?
Well, it's pretty large. It's probably about 5 feet tall and three feet wide.
Yeah, it's a big plant.
Probably 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah, I'd say it's just, if you've got it in full sun, it's just the summer sun finally getting to it and just kind of baking on it a little bit. That's my opinion.
Yeah, maybe a little leaf scorch. You know, I have an oak leaf that's down at the garden center. It's right out there by the road. It takes a beating in the hot sun, and it holds up fairly well. If I water it a little more often, you know, it holds up a little better, getting that moisture. You know, Snow Queen is one of those oak leaf hydrangeas that I have found that gives you its best performance, the most amount of blooms when it gets a lot of sun. Sometimes I can almost count 200 blooms on this particular hydrangea.
Yeah, and it'll handle some of the sun, but there's some of those oak leaves, the leaves are just so big, and if we get a hot, hot summer, it's hard for the plant to draw up that much moisture, so you'll get that browning and the curling. Especially when you get into the August time, if that's kind of the timing, it'll burn up a little bit. You could try to water. Just remember, don't water every day, but heavy watering less often, I think, would really not. And when I say less often, I don't mean ever.
Yeah,
I just mean maybe once a week or twice.
Yes. Yeah, a good deep drink, you know, and let it go to a little bit to the dry side between watering. And for the most part, you know, I know some of the other oak leaf hydrangeas, for example, like Ruby's Flippers, you know, it would like to have a little bit more shade. Maybe Sykes Dwarf would like to have a little bit more shade. You know, they'll, you know, part sun, part shade's ideal. But like I said, I know Snow Queen for me has done phenomenally well, having given all that sun amount, sunlight.
And hers may be because of this. That's about the size.
Yeah, the size
could be.
Yeah, yeah. And the only other thing I ever see that really plagues oak leaf hydrangeas, and this isn't anything to be concerned about, it's pretty common. You see those little round, like rust spots on the leaves. That's just a disease called Cercospora. It's common. It's just aesthetic. It doesn't kill the plant or hurt it. But try giving it just a little bit more moisture when it gets hot, and I think that you might notice a difference.
Real quick follow-up question. What do you think about transplanting? Is that possible to move it?
At that size, no. I would be a little apprehensive about it, but if you do, I would do it later in the year.
I would, and cut it way back.
And cut it way back and get as much of the root ball as you possibly can.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good. Thank you.
All right, Ann. Have a good weekend. And we have Denny the bird guy with us, but we'll get to Denny when we come out of the break. And if you have anything you want to add to the conversation this morning, certainly feel free to do so. 749-B105, In and Around the House. I'm Tony Wirtz with Bob Bard. We'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. If you're just joining us, welcome. And we've been covering some ground already, and we're getting quite a few calls. And continue bringing the calls in. If you have some questions, now's the time of year to start talking about gardening. Things are waking up. It's spring, and everybody is anxious to get out into the landscape, the garden.
I'm very anxious.
Just start working it. And our good friend, I haven't heard from Denny in a while, is with us, the Birdman. Good morning, Denny. How are you?
I'm good. And yourself?
We're doing well. How's life treating you, bud?
Oh, not too bad. I can't complain too much. Even if I did, nobody would listen.
Oh, we certainly would. We would listen to you, bud. We would listen. What's going on? I was just thinking about you.
You were talking about weed control and things like that. I just figured I'd give you a couple of tips on how I do it.
All right.
That's good.
Fire away.
Well, on those green onions, the way we used to do it down on the old farm was we took a pair of scissors, cut the tops off, and then painted it with the weed killer.
Okay.
Just a little paintbrush and just wipe it on there?
Cheap little dollar paintbrush from the hardware store or something like that. A little bucket. What I use is the ready-to-use. Just pour it in a bucket and just dab the paintbrush with it and just dab it on the green onions after you've cut the tops off.
There you go. A little dab it, do you?
Yeah, you're talking about bruising it. Well, if you cut the tops off, that's basically the same thing. It's opening up those leaves so it'd soak in.
There you go.
Exactly.
So, and then on my flower beds and things like that, I use the turf and ornamental, you know, with the
dimension as a pre-emergent.
As a pre-emergent. And I also mix in a little bit of malorganite with that.
That's a good idea. You know, spread both out there.
Fertilize the plants at the same time.
Okay, that's a great idea.
That's a good idea.
And it's an all-organic fertilizer, so it's good for the plants, and it's good for, you know, it really helps with the iron that is in malorganite.
Well,
greens it up.
My yard's a certified backyard wildlife preserve and stuff like that, so I try and go as natural as possible.
I'm with you. I'm all in. Yeah, the only time I go to guns is if I really, really have to.
Yeah, that's the way I am. If I really got to get rid of some weeds or something like that, I'll spray or something. But, you know, and I always look out for the bees and things like that, too. So.
Yeah. You know, Denny, always good to hear from you. A couple quick things here. Give us an update. Where are our hummingbirds in relation to?
I don't know. I've had a hummingbird feeder out for a week yet, and I haven't spotted any.
Okay.
It's still early, though, isn't it?
Next week or so, they'll probably be coming around.
Yes. You need to let us know when they're here.
It's still early, isn't it?
I always do.
And I also want to thank you once again for the invitation over there to the maple syrup day. I really enjoyed myself. You made my day. You made my afternoon that day,
well,
Denny.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad you finally made it out and everything, you know. You know, it's just something we do every year, and I've enjoyed it every year. So
I see why. There were a lot of people there, and also the Birds of Prey. Did you happen to see our Facebook page? Just that picture of you holding the screech owl was just.
Yep.
was priceless.
Yeah, I seen it. My daughter showed me.
Yeah, no, I really enjoy myself, and I just want to say thank you again.
Well, what would I be? How can I be a bird guy without showing you some birds?
That's right.
That's true.
That's a good point.
I'd show you some of the birds I work with and stuff like that at the parks and things. So,
all right,
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did. Have a great weekend. Thanks, buddy. Stay in touch with
us. I'll be talking to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You and Denny are the same. Like to go El Natural.
El Natural. Great guy right there. Really is. He's been a longtime listener of the show, and he calls in often, and that's what it's all about.
I love that I got a face to put with a voice.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's what I love about, you know, going back, and I just scrolled back real quick while you were talking to him and saw those pictures, and that way I could see Denny's face while he's talking. That, I don't know. It just makes it more personal. Yeah, I like it.
That it does. And we also have Carol with us on the line this morning. Good morning, Carol. How are you?
Good morning. I'm just fine. Thank you.
Good.
I have a question about a large ajuga bed I had.
Uh-huh.
It was a very healthy, very thriving bed. Did not plant it. It planted itself somehow.
Uh-huh.
It was probably 6 or 7 feet by maybe about 4 feet or
mm-hmm.
so.
Yeah.
And last fall, when closing everything down, it was doing well. And this spring, it's all dead.
You know, you're bringing up a very good point, and I've had this happen to me personally, and it's a very difficult thing to control, and what it is, it's a crown rot. And what happens when that bed becomes really full and massive, it's very important to thin it out.
Oh.
And if you thin it out and you take that approach periodically every couple of years, it's aggressive enough, it will come back in and fill in rather quickly. The only thing that I can't answer at the moment, once that happens, I don't know if that stays in the soil, if it's soil borne, and if in fact it would have any negative effect on you planting ajuga in that same bed down the road. I'd have to look into that.
Okay.
It's sometimes it's the inevitable, and it happens, and it's because of it, you know, becoming overcrowded, and with a lot of moisture, it gets that crown rot.
Okay, because this is the second time I've had it happen, two different areas in my yard. I had a nice bed of it in a different spot, and it just died out instantly, too. And I just was like, what is going on?
Can I ask you, did it have... The ajuga that I lost when I had just this happen, it was a burgundy glow. It had some purple tinge to the leaf.
Yes.
Is it the type that you have?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Because I don't know if like bronze beauty or chocolate chip or black scallop would be affected as much. But I had burgundy glow, and that was the one I had to thin out, and it helped when I took that approach.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. I thought the thicker it got, the better, the healthier it was.
Right, right. No,
just, but with this season was so wet.
Mm-hmm.
It was just or the winter season was so wet, and I think that had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, you know, last year was kind of wet. We've been in a wet period. You know, Carol, if you hang on, I'll have I'll get his number. Alex will get your phone number, and I'll find out if that remains in the soil and if that would prohibit you from continuing to plant ajuga and try to replace some of that.
I always recommended planting a different ground cover if you needed to.
Usually
switch
I do
it.
As well,
switch
but I'm,
it.
That I don't know, and I can't say for sure. And those are the kind of things I'm interested in and would like to pick up on.
This happened to me twice. I don't know that I really want to go the ajuga route again.
You know, what kind of sun exposure do you get to that particular bed?
That particular bed gets more sun.
More sun?
Yeah. A good amount of sun.
A little bit of shade maybe by chance or no?
Only in the early morning.
You know, I'm wondering, you know, Vinca minor.
Yeah, I would switch it for sure. I would not use ajuga again.
I know that Darts Blue Vinca Minor might be a good choice
Vinca
there.
Minor.
I think if the ajuga did well there, I think that the Vinca Minor would, and that's one of my favorites. Kind of dainty, you know, well-behaved, so to speak. Gets that nice blue bloom in the spring.
Mm-hmm. Even though it's a ground cover, it's tend to be a little more open and airy, so the soil dries out a little bit better than sometimes ajuga.
Well, I do have a bed of Vinca Minor on each side of my steps. Now, it doesn't get as much sun, but I've been having trouble with what I thought was the same thing, crown rot, on that.
If it stays moist and wet, it will. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm a little concerned about trying another bed of that as well because I've been really struggling with the Vinca.
You know, do you said if you get a lot of sun there and if it doesn't stay wet, One of my favorites is Woolly Thyme.
Okay.
That might be interesting, too. You know, check that out. You know, it's all about moisture. If you get good drainage, the Woolly Thyme, you know, plenty of sun, might be very interesting. It's kind of like a, it just kind of spreads. It's gentle. You almost want to just, like, lay down on it. It looks so soft.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, thanks for the suggestions and the information. I do appreciate it.
All right, Carol. Always a pleasure to hear from you. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
Okay, thanks.
All right, we got to take another quick break. When we come out of the break, what plant am I? Get excited about it. Took a picture the other day. I was out delivering. I was out in the Villa Hills area, and it was just, she was beautiful. 749-B105, In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to In and Around the House on B105 with Tony Works. I am Bob Bard, and we are just having a great day. It's getting brighter in the morning. And don't you just love, Tony, the fact it's 7 o'clock and it already, you can see the light shining? Because, you know, for a while, that winter, when we're here in the studio and you look out, it's still 8 o'clock and it still seems dark.
I like 3:30 in the morning because I got up.
Yeah, I would like that, too.
I like
that's
6 o'clock.
Happen.
I like 7 o'clock. I like 8 o'clock. I can see a little bit of sunshine out there.
Something's shining on the buildings downtown. I don't know what that is, but overall, it looks mainly cloudy today. We're going to be a high of 70, according to the weather. Might get some thunderstorms today, and also just be cautious. They said there's a chance of some tornadic activity, so just keep an eye on the sky and keep your phone handy if you get alerts. That way you can make sure you're safe today. Just want to make sure you're safe.
So what did you think of What Plant Am I?
Oh, she's pretty.
She is.
She is pretty. She's the one everybody wants to look at.
Now, this could be one of two plants, or one or two cultivars of this particular species, but it's a yellow blooming magnolia.
It is. It looks like butterflies to me, just based on the flower itself. I may be wrong, but what a beautiful specimen this is. And to see something in that pale yellow bloom, she's pretty big, though. I was kind of surprised how big she is. I mean, if you look on that picture, she's getting up near the wires. And she's got some size to her.
Yeah, Tom Montz commented on that. He's like, yeah, until the utility companies get to her.
Well, let's hope they don't.
Let's hope not. I was out delivering the other day, and it's not often that I'm out and about, and it just caught my eye, and I thought, all right, when I come back by, I'm going to pull off to the side and take your photo.
And the angle you're at, you know, maybe it looks a little closer to the lines from where
and maybe
you're taking
it
the picture.
Yeah,
so let's
and maybe it
not.
Isn't. I really wasn't focusing in on the how close it was. And that's a good topic, too. You never want to plant something, especially this beautiful, right directly underneath any type of utility lines.
No,
because
absolutely.
They will come in and work on it for you.
It's not really working. I wouldn't say working. I'd say butchering. If you look at some of the trees,
well,
now I know their job is to cut them back.
I was trying to be nice.
I know. You're the nice one. You're the nice one of the show. I'm not, so... I love the magnolia. I think it's beautiful. What a year we're having, because sometimes you buy a magnolia, you get a day, here comes the storm, and there's no blooms. We're having a pretty good year with magnolias this year, wouldn't you think?
That's my point. When I saw this, I thought this is appropriate because they've been holding on to their blooms a lot longer than what you would typically see, because it always seems as if we just get really cold, it gets really windy, it just rains hard, and all of a sudden... the beautiful blooming show is over.
Or you get a frost, and all of a sudden you get one day, here comes the cold, and wham, they are brown, and there's no color, no fragrance. Because a lot of magnolias have incredible fragrances. That's what people forget about the magnolias. And I love not just this particular one, which is great, but I love the smaller ones. Some of my favorites are Anne and Betty. I love the little series. I just think some of those are incredible plants. Now, we say small, they're still... 8 to 10 foot tall, but that's small considering a magnolia. When you look on Facebook and you see the yellow butterflies magnolia, and that's probably 25 feet tall, wouldn't you think?
That's a pretty good sized tree, but it's also up behind that wall, so I can't really tell.
Well, those are Texas hicsi, so we got a envision kind of over there on the left on the bottom of the picture. Those evergreens are probably about 5 feet tall. So if you kind of multiply those, it's probably 20 to 25 feet
tall.
There's
Bob with the multiplier effect.
That's what I do.
That's what I like. What I like about you, mathematician.
Mathematician, half the time.
We also have Mike on the line with us, Bob. Okay. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Pretty good. How you guys doing?
Doing well. What's going on?
Hey, I've got a question. I've got a buckeye tree.
Mm-hmm.
And
You're breaking up a little bit. Can you say that again?
I got a buckeye tree, and it loses leaves early. It doesn't produce very many nuts.
Yeah, you know what? That's not uncommon to see the buckeyes later in the summer. They get a little ratty and beat up. I used to have a buckeye tree down in my backyard. Okay. And, yeah, it was not uncommon for me to start seeing it dropping its foliage way, way earlier than most other trees.
Okay, I thought that was
uncommon. So that's pretty common. But as far as how old is the buckeye tree?
Yeah, honestly, really don't know. I bought the house and
we're kind of losing. Yeah, that
you.
Happens on a buckeye tree, and you know, nothing to worry about. It's just kind of something we get. It's ironic that Ohio is the buckeye state, but yet sometimes those buckeye trees do that, don't they?
They do, and I have one, in the garden center now called Fort McNair. And this might be a good question for our special guest at 8 o'clock, because this guy is highly, highly respected in our area. And I have a great deal of respect for him. And again, you had mentioned this is one of our prized jewels in our own backyard
here
in the Cincinnati area.
And to be honest with you, it may be one of the prized jewels in the United States.
That, yeah.
Now I gave a third clue.
There's a lot of notoriety.
Hey, we have a three-step?
Yeah, we got a couple of that too. But what I wanted to talk about was our call there with Mike. He was talking about it losing its leaves and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I have one in the nursery called Fort McNair.
Okay.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And it's supposed to be a lot more resistant to that kind of, exposure to where they kind of get a little ratty, tatty, the leaves start to brown up and drop. They're known to do that.
Right. It just gets hot and then some moisture on the leaves. There's a few different ways that it can happen, but, the buckeye. Definitely, I wouldn't worry about it. I mean, once the leaves fall off, typically it comes out in the spring, it should be fine. If he's having issues when the leaves first come out, I would recommend that he gets to an arborist and talks to him. But, I'd say if it's just later in the season, to be honest with you, I wouldn't worry about too much.
Do you sell a lot of buckeyes in your garden center?
No, I actually, finding buckeyes is not easy,
mm-hmm.
believe it or not, to sell.
Yeah. You know, the thing of it is, too, it does take a while for some of the younger buckeyes to start producing, too. So I think he had mentioned something about that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of different buckeyes that are native to our area. And one of my favorites, too, is the bottle brush.
Yep.
That's very, very popular.
Yeah, it is. Do you sell a lot? It's just hard to
kind
find.
I've had people look at Fort McNair, especially when it was in bloom, beautiful mm-hmm. bloom on it. And I love the structure of that buckeye because it just looks beefy. It looks like a tree that goes to the gym and works out.
Mm-hmm.
It does. So
it's a neat tree, and I would definitely, if you can find one, and you got some space. I'm always big into plant different varieties of trees. I think it just makes it interesting. Makes your property more interesting. So if you have some space for some of these trees to really grow, start creating your own little arboretum.
There you go.
You're
on the National Historic List, right?
But going back to what plant am I, because we had the call, but, I mentioned the small magnolias. Are there any ones that you really like? I know we touched on it 3 or 4 weeks ago.
I like Leonard Messel.
Oh, I love Leonard Messel.
I think that's a good one, and I still like the Royal Star. I love the bark on the Royal Star.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep it kind of limbed up a little bit and opened up on the inside, I just think it has a very interesting look to it. Its character as it grows, it's very smooth. It's got that light color. I think, you talk about accent lighting and so forth. Trees like that, when you have up lighting, I think it just gives it a really nice look, especially in the landscape at night. It's one of my favorites. The only thing about, when we talk about those types of magnolias that so important for the homeowner to pay attention to, that is scale.
Magnolia scale.
That's an insect that will get on your magnolias and you're not paying any attention. And all of a sudden, after a couple of years of a decent infestation, all of a sudden you'll just start seeing your magnolia taking on this black sooty mold look.
Mm-hmm. And all right on the bark.
Yeah, on the bark, on the foliage and everything. And that's an indicator that you have scale issues going on. And the way to combat that is to use oils and spray. The scale can be very difficult to remove, but the oils smother them. And spraying dormant oil on them when they're dormant, like late winter, you want to, you know, and you want to spray where it's not too warm, you know, right, around that 40 degree range, you know, I think is really good. 50s. Don't spray when it's really, really hot. That's,
you know,
not good.
I like to also put the drench on the magnolia when, yes, I'm having a magnolia scale issue. I think it helps.
That's one of those preventative measures, mm-hmm, that you can take, and I would do it after it's in bloom.
Yes.
After it's finished blooming, go ahead and apply the systemic drench.
Which is probably next week.
Yeah, we're not far. Yeah.
Yeah, within, and it doesn't have to be next week. It could be next week within, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. So, you know, it definitely would be something I would consider. But
right,
one real quick, my favorite is still the Sweet Bay Magnolia. Absolutely love the Sweet,
yeah,
Bay, because,
you know,
it blooms later in the season. It smells great.
Kind of, know, a citrusy fragrance, I think.
Got to have room to let some of these magnolias. One final thought on magnolias is make sure you know what size they're going to get, because some magnolias get big.
You know what? Real quick, Alex, we're going to load up the phone lines here. Bob and I want to give away a Fertilume 3-step program for a 5,000 square foot lawn. That's all 3 steps. That's the all seasons and the lawn food plus iron. You're going to get 2 bags of those for 5,000 square feet. Caller number 8. Call in for a program from Fertilume for your lawn.
Yep.
749-B105, In and Around the House. I'm Tony Wirtz with Bob Bard. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Wirtz with Bob Bard. And don't forget, this weekend, the Masters. If you're a golf enthusiast, who doesn't love to watch the Masters with those azaleas in full bloom?
Oh, did you love looking at 13, 14, and 15? I forget what they call those three, but those holes are just incredible. Amen's Corner. I mean, just incredible. The azaleas are gorgeous. All the pine straw. I know that's one of your favorites. They mulch with pine straw.
Oh, yeah.
It's awesome.
It's all good.
It is.
It's all good. It's a great weekend to take that in. And also, the weather's been kind of nice around here. I'm starting to see people out there at the driving range, and I'm getting antsy.
You know,
I need to work on my game, Bob.
But it's the time to get the 3-step down. But who's our winner?
Our winner is Russell. Is it Russell Johnson? Is that his last name? Russell, good morning. How are you?
Just fine, thank you.
All right. Tell us a little bit about your lawn, and are you a Fertilume person? You're going to be if you aren't, right?
I certainly will be. That's correct.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Yeah, just feel free to come on down here to the station, pick up your 5,000 square foot 3-step program from Fertilume, and congratulations, by the way.
Thank you so much. About 3/4 of an acre, I'll love it.
Well,
hey,
there you go.
Go.
Part of it
good
definitely
start.
Will. So, yeah, we're here to help you, and thanks again, and appreciate you listening. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right. Take care,
bye-bye.
Russell.
Hey, we were talking about killing weeds just a little bit ago, not to change the subject, but Aaron Merritt just put on Facebook that his wife had some luck with a very organic spray. And it was mixing 1 gallon of vinegar, 1/2 cup of salt, and a little bit of Dawn dish detergent.
Mm-hmm.
And said he had all kinds of success killing weeds, which I've heard that before. That one is something we've talked about on the air of using vinegar.
Yeah,
but be careful.
That's a sustainable.
It does burn.
Yeah, and it will burn.
If
you
spray your desirable good plants,
yeah,
it'll
even
get
grass,
those too.
Even grass.
Even grass.
So keep that in mind. Give us some insight why we're using dishwashing detergent.
The dishwashing detergent is basically a sticking agent. It's going to help the chemical that you mix or the organic chemical, whatever it is, it's going to help it adhere to the weed or whatever you're trying to kill better.
That it does. It helps with the product adhering to the foliage a lot better and helps facilitate getting that product into it. And,
don't put that in first. Because
if you put that in first,
and then you put the water in, you're going to have about 1/4 gallon of water and about 3/4 gallon of suds.
Yeah.
So it goes in last.
Yeah, do that last. You don't want that thing foaming up.
And
you don't want all that foaming action.
No. Do you ever feel like when you're spraying weeds that, have you ever tried mixing hot water in instead of cold? See if it made a difference?
No, I don't use cold. I don't use hot. I just use something just kind of, you know, tepid to touch or, you know, a little warm, so to speak. Nothing, no.
I've mixed hot water in some where I'm spraying not on lawns, but where I want to kill everything, like if I'm spraying on the driveways or gravels, just to see if it worked better. And I don't know if it did or didn't, but it seemed, honestly, it kind of seemed to help.
How hot was it?
It was the hottest water out of the tap I could get, not boiling.
Yeah, I have no idea. So I
didn't know if you've ever
that's
tried.
A good no. It's a good question though.
I thought it helped.
I just think having the right amount of product in there with the mix, according to the labels, is what you need to do and is the most important.
You mean I shouldn't mix twice as much, Tony?
No.
Why not?
More's not better.
Not on weed control.
Not on anything.
It's wasteful. You know, if you're spraying any of the weed-free zone or weed out with crabgrass killer or even kills all, and it says mix whatever, so let's say it's just 2 ounces per gallon, just mix 2 ounces per gallon. Four isn't going to make it work any better.
I hear you. Hey, let's switch gears here, and let's talk about our plant of the week.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think about that?
I like it. What do you think? I'm going to let you go first. You always ask me. I'm going to let you go first.
I think right now, the reason why I think that this plant deserves a lot of credit and merit, which it does, it's been around for a long time, and it's a beautiful blooming tree.
You'll see it at the Masters.
Reasonably well-behaved, so to speak. Doesn't get overly big. It doesn't take over. It's not rude. It's very polite and beautiful when it's in bloom, and that is the dogwood.
Yes, and they're getting ready to show, aren't they?
You know, I have some in the nursery right now that are showing some really nice color.
Already, huh?
Yes,
so I do. So you're one of the early ones.
You know, and some of them, you know, they maybe a little bit, depending upon where they come from when they're shipped in. You mm-hmm. know, I had those that came in. They were dormant from the West Coast out of Oregon, and some from out of the South. Those are the ones that are showing just a little bit more of an edge of color right now.
Do you find it's better to plant a dogwood in the spring or fall?
I'm in the spring.
I am too.
I want it to get well rooted in. Now, the thing of it is too, you know, some varieties of dogwoods, the Floridian varieties, if it's an ugly spring, a very damp, wet, and cool, cold spring, you know what that spells, or it could?
Could spell big problems.
Yeah. And that's it's an ugly disease that sometimes can afflict the Floridian varieties of the dogwood. And that's one called anthracnose. But don't let that deter you from this beautiful specimen.
Right. But also, don't plant a dogwood in a really wet area.
No, not in a wet area. And you want it in an area, you know, they're kind of the type of a plant that, you know, or tree that likes to be on the edge of a woodland kind of setting.
Mm-hmm.
They like just a little bit of shade, if you can give them a little bit of shade. And also good air movement, so to speak. And a lot of times you'll find yourself, you're not afflicted with that ugly disease that they can sometimes get.
And when a dogwood is at its peak, if you're lucky enough to get the right weather, the right amount of moisture, the right temperatures, there's really not much prettier than a dogwood tree. The problem is we live in Cincinnati, and sometimes they're not always perfect. But one that I love the Coosa dogwood.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's the Chinese variety that Bob's just talking about, mm-hmm. which is a lot more disease resistant than the Floridian varieties, and a prolific bloomer by all means. But sometimes I have to give the edge to the Floridian varieties.
Well, when they're in bloom side by side, the Floridian is going to be, a prettier tree.
I agree.
It is. But if I had to choose a hardy one and I wanted one I knew it's going to survive in our area. I'm going with the Coosa. I just am.
Which one?
Any of the whites, I have better success than the pink. The pink Coosa, for some reason, I have not had as much success with.
Interesting. You know, and the Chinese varieties bloom a little later
mm-hmm.
than the Floridian varieties. So, you know, it's hard to see them side by side sometimes.
It is. And what's amazing is dogwoods, I mean, they can go much further north than us and still survive.
Mm-hmm.
However, I really think sometimes our clay, that it kind of plays a little havoc on some of these dogwoods. I think our soil content is why you see other flowering trees doing better than a dogwood.
Yeah, you know, they like acidic soil basis, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're planting one, be sure to add some pine fines to the soil, to your existing soil as you're turning it in. Peat moss, of course, you know, and fertilization doesn't, you know, hurt either. You know, don't use the green box on your trees and your shrubs and your perennials and so forth. Use other products that are more geared towards those specific varieties. You know, mm-hmm. when you're fertilizing things like the dogwood and so forth, that's an acid-loving kind of plant. So you need to use those type of fertilizers.
Is there one you really like? for the dogwood?
Yeah, there is. And you know, I like holly tone.
Okay.
You know, that's the one I like a lot, and that's the one I use a lot when you're talking about feeding acid-loving plants. It's been around for a long time, and a lot of people have had great success with it. That's the one I go to.
Yeah, well, like, you can't go wrong with it.
No, not at all.
It's organic. It works. It's a good one. Even though it says holly tone, that's the only thing I don't like about the product. It says holly tone, so you automatically assume just hollies. But it's not. It's a good general fertilizer.
Yeah, it's great for evergreens too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
So, you know, you were talking about the Cornus Cusa. Probably one that I have to say that I like is Milky Way.
That's probably the most popular one.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the cream-colored blooms. Maybe you might see a little white in that cream color, but
it's an off-white
specimen. 15, 20 feet, would you say, in height?
Yeah,
maybe
out at 20 in Cincinnati just because our climate and the growth time that we actually have.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you get a little further south, it might be a little bit bigger, but I think up here, just because of our growing season and how long it isn't, I think that slows it down a little
bit. And I like the red color that you get on this particular tree in the fall.
I think that's a plus.
So you get the blooms, you know, you get that nice fall color with the red foliage. You just can't go wrong with that. And you get a lot of nice fall colors with the dogwoods.
And if the Cusa is really good, it almost looks like there's kind of snow sitting on it. Kind of like on some of the areas.
Yeah.
But that's not very often, but it can. It's just, but the Cusa dog, I just like the Cusa. I have put it in some sunnier spots and seem to have really good success with it.
Mm-hmm.
Hot south side, not so much. But, you know, if it gets a little morning sun or afternoon sun, I tend to do pretty well with it.
Now, I brought one in from J. Frank Schmidt that I'm not that familiar with. I've never really have seen it too often, but it's one called Heartthrob. And it's a Cornus Cusa. And it's got those pinkish colors, you know, in the bloom itself, kind of like a white background with some
pink.
Yeah. And it turns a deep red in the fall. So I'm looking forward to seeing this one coming into bloom.
Now, I don't think you can go wrong for trying it. That's for sure.
No, not at all. Any variegated varieties kind of come to mind or anything that that you've seen?
100% true. I've never had much success with any of the variegated dogwoods. They look amazing the first year in the spring. They look great through the summer. Fall, they're awesome. And then next spring, not great success. That's just a personal opinion that we've had.
Yeah. Well, hold on to that thought, because there's one I think it's okay, but I think we need a little bit of shade when we talk about the variegated dogwood. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony Works and Bob Bard. Also, we're going to give away one more three-step program for a 5,000 square foot lawn from Fertilum. We're going to do caller number 6, but here's what you have to do. We have a special guest at 8:00.
Right.
You have to know who this person is. You have to guess who this person is. We're going to give you a hint. He is with the Cincinnati Zoo Botanical Gardens. That is our special guest coming up around the 8:00 hour. If you can tell us who that person is, let's forget the number of the caller. The first person that can tell us who our special guest is from the Cincinnati Zoo Botanical Gardens, you'll get a 3-step program from Fertilum for 5,000 square foot. 749-B105, in and around the house. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and we've been flooded with calls.
But they haven't got it yet.
No, they have not gotten it yet. Our special guest is coming in around the 8:00 hour. And it is not Thane Maynard. So I just kind of want to throw that other hint out. It's somebody else, well-known, well-respected, and has been with the zoo for a number of years.
Think horticulture.
Think about the zoo's botanical gardens. And another hint, it is not Scott Beierlein either. So we're kind of throwing some hints your way for a 3-step program, 5,000 square foot.
Alex has a question for us. Maybe it'll help the listeners.
Right. Good morning. So my mom just texted me and said, could she use a dwarf hydrangea instead of a boxwood as a hedge? One area gets full sun and the other gets partial sun. And what kind?
Yeah, you could use a type of hydrangea for, you know, you can do anything as a hedgerow or...
Yeah, you could put them together. Now, if you put them in full sun with hydrangeas,
well, some of the sun-loving hydrangeas.
Yes, if you did like Bobo.
Bobo might be one. Little lime. Quick fire.
Yep. There are some varieties that will, but some of them may not, too. So, but Bobo hydrangea, what is that, strawberry sundae? That's a pretty one.
Yep.
That's a pretty one.
That would get a little taller. So if you're, it just depends on the size that you're looking for. But I tell you what, you can't beat little quick fire, man. It's just, I just remember when I first had that into the our garden center years ago. It was so hot one summer, and this thing would just brush it off. The heat didn't even bother it, and it just bloomed its head off.
Yep, and you can put them. I've got them at the back of my house. I've got in the summer, which actually does burn up a little bit in the summer because it's full western exposure. It's not the best, but it blooms really, really well. But there's five of them, and when they grow together, it makes a great hedge, and they really, really do well. So, yes, you can use hydrangeas in place of boxwood, but remember, they're not an evergreen, so they will lose their leaves in the winter.
Totally.
Yeah. Oh, we
have a winner. I think we might have a winner.
We finally have a winner for the zoo.
Hang on there. Keep them on the line there. But I think we have a winner here. That was a tough one.
You know, that's fun. I think it makes it tough when our listeners have to work a little bit. Sometimes you make it too easy for
you think
them.
So?
Yeah, like the butterfly maple. I mean, you could look at the picture and you could have spotted that
butterfly magnolia?
Yeah, magnolia. Yeah.
No, it's all right. I knew what you were talking about. I do that all the time. But, you know, it's not making it too easy. It was just too beautiful to pass up.
Yeah.
That's how I was looking at that.
No, so but we do have a winner?
We do have a winner. Are they on the line there?
Peggy.
Good morning, Peggy. How are you?
I'm great. And yourself?
We're doing well, thank you. Do you know Steve? Steve Foltz?
No, I do not, but it helps to have a Google search.
There you go.
I thought it was Thane, because that's the only one that I remember.
Yeah, no, well, it's Thane, very popular. Steve Foltz as well, great guy, lives over in northern Kentucky, and they do a wonderful job, he and his staff at the Cincinnati Zoo. And we're going to talk about some zoo blooms when Steve joins us here around the 8 o'clock hour. This guy, I have a great deal of respect for Steve, especially in our industry, a wealth of knowledge right there. So hang on. Alex is going to get some information from you, and you are the recipient. Congratulations for a 3-step program from Fertiloom, and that's for 5,000 square feet.
That's what I need in my yard.
All right, Peggy. Have a great weekend. Thank you.
And so, thanks to all the listeners that called in, because we had phones were lighting up, and it was fun. And we love it when the listeners call
Alex
in.
Alex's ears red. He was answering so many calls.
I know. You can see his face light up.
He's got cauliflower ear over there. It's all swollen.
So what's going on at Jackson's right now, though, Tony?
You know, I tell you what. I just every day when I go in, I can't keep from looking at the creeping flocks. I mean, they're just starting to explode with color.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've been driving around a little bit, I've been noticing a lot of the creeping flocks. Just the other day, I wanted to stop and take some photographs. I know they just turn green after the show's over, but boy, at this time of year, when they cascade over a wall, a stone wall, they just look spectacular.
Yeah, you can't go wrong. I love the creeping flocks right now. You know, the red buds are starting to come into bloom. We had talked about that a few weeks ago.
The magnolias. You know, the crab apples are blooming. I told you some of our dogwoods that came up from out of the south are starting to put some color on.
Right.
You look outside and it's color. And that's what this time of year is all about.
Yeah. And you know, I just absolutely love spring. I know the pollen is starting to get a little bad. So those who have allergies might be struggling a little bit.
Shake it off.
But I tell you what, it is just beautiful out there right now. And you know, even when you start looking at, and I know the honeysuckle is definitely a weed, but I love the green just starting to show up of the honeysuckle, the red maples, and all the maples are starting to bud up. I mean, it's just an exciting time in Cincinnati to be in our industry and talk about landscaping and plants and everything going on. It's just so much fun.
You know, it's amazing how things just wake up. And just the other day, I just remembered walking by one of the tulip trees that we have in the garden center. You know, and it was, you know, it was dormant, as dormant could be. And I just walked by it the other day, and I was like, wow, it's just amazing how much new growth they just push with in a short amount of time.
Well, not to mention, I mean, all the
stuff you can almost watch stuff like that grow.
Exactly. You definitely can this time of year. And in our greenhouse, the annuals are really waking up, and they just look incredible. We're trimming them back. It seems like they're growing overnight. But, you know, you're starting to look at people's yard and you're seeing tulip bulbs and hyacinths and daffodils and, you know, all this pretty stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, and this is why we love Cincinnati. I know we have our ups and downs and our ebbs and flow of Cincinnati, and don't blink.
And what might those be, Bob? Like, is it sports related? Well, the ebbs and flows, the ups and downs? Hold on to that thought, because we have to take another quick break. And hang in there with us, you know, add to the conversation. And also, you want to hang around Steve Foltz from the Cincinnati Zoo's Botanical Garden. Will be joining us here just shortly. And we're going to talk about some things that you might see and really take in and enjoy at the Cincinnati Zoo, a wonderful gym in our own backyard here in Cincinnati. And give us a shout if anything you want to talk about in the landscape or the garden. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Wirth with Bob Bard. We'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Wirth with Bob Bard, and Bob is a big Michael Jackson fan, and he was requesting this song all morning.
Did you see me moonwalk?
I saw you.
I'm glad there's no
Alex
video
finally came
here
through for you, and that's great. And
if there was video in here, everybody would be laughing.
We've been having a great morning thus far and talking a lot of gardening, and we've had a lot of phone calls, and I get excited this time of year. It's our time to shine. And with that said, we have a couple callers online. Leanne, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
What can we help you with?
I have a hibiscus in my backyard, and last year in an ice storm, it seemed to sort of separate in the middle, and part of it seems to be growing left together as a clump, and the other part, the whole plant leans a little bit left, but it's sort of split in the middle, and part of it's leaning over,
mm-hmm.
And I was wondering how I can trim it and how drastic I can get.
You can go into it pretty hard. You're going to sacrifice, you know, some time in bloom over, you know, as we start progressing forward. Is it more shrub form right now, or is it a tree form type hibiscus? You're talking like the Rose of Sharon.
Yeah, it's more shrub form.
Yeah, I think a big haircut would definitely be helpful. Just take some of that weight off, let it kind of heal before the new growth comes out. You're going to sacrifice a lot of blooms this year. That's okay, because it's better to have a good plant than it is to have extra bloom. So I think at this point, do that. And then a little light fertilization would be great.
Mm-hmm.
I like Start and Grow from Fertilome. I think that's a fantastic product. It'll feed it for 3 to 4 months, which is the entire growing season of that plant. I know Tony likes some of the Espoma products on that
I like
as well.
There's a lot of fertilizers I like. It just depends on what I'm doing and what I'm using it on. But, you know, how long has this plant been established? How long have you had your hibiscus, your Rose of Sharon?
She's about 4 years old, I guess.
Okay. I would say she would have somewhat of a sizable root structure, root system, which, you know, when you remove some of that top as we're starting to reshape it and get it back into form, you know, we have that large root structure underground. I think it might happen a little quicker than you would anticipate. So that's coming into favor, too. I just was curious how long you've had her, how old it's been, you know, how long it's been in its current location.
But the storm just kind of split her into two pieces, and I wasn't sure what to do.
I know the feeling. I just had that happen the other day. A large tree limb fell, and this was yesterday, and it just took down half of the side of one of my Serbian spruces, and I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Oh no.
Yeah, nothing's more aggravating than that. But you know what, send us a photograph if you like, so we can just see it. You know, it's always interesting to see things like that. Not that we want to see those kind of things.
How do I send it?
You just go on our Facebook page, and you can send it that way, or you can email us in and around the house at b105.com and just attach it that way.
And then we'll get it posted, and then we can talk about it. So other listeners might be going through the same thing you are, and then we can share it with them.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people have lost things. All right, we got to take another quick break, and thank you, Leanne. Have a great weekend. We have to take another quick break, and we'll get our guests settled in as well. And also, I think we have Ron on the line. Ron, hang in there with us, and we'll get to you when we come back out of the break. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Wirth with Bob Bard. We'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Wirth with Bob Bard, and we're getting our guest, our good friend Steve Foltz, settled in here in just a second or two. And we'll talk about some things going on at the Cincinnati Zoo, because there's a lot going on, and you certainly want to take that all in and get up there and enjoy some of it. But before we do that, we have Ron, who's been patiently waiting for us here on the line. Good morning, Ron. How are you?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Going well. What can we help you with?
So I got a job coming up, and I'm pretty inexperienced with this, which I'm okay with saying. I got to take about a yard and a half topsoil, need to spread it out, need to reseed an area, sun, shade, about half and half. I guess my biggest question is, should I, other than just like hard rake, do I need to till that bottom layer up before I put all that topsoil down, seed, straw, and so forth? I guess that's my biggest thing because I've never seeded that large of an area.
What are you covering? Is it a lot of weeds and various things are kind of like hodgepodge still in play?
No, it's good grass. It's well-established grass, real thick grass in a backyard. Like I said, it's about half and half, sun and shade. But
is it just settled and you got some low spots? You're trying to level it up?
It's actually pretty level. It's just gotten screwed up from it. He's doing an addition on the back of his house. So between wheelbarrows, ladders, stomping in it, the rain we've had, it's going to need the whole area.
Okay, so you're just repairing all the traffic. All the traffic that's been taking place during this construction part, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I would start with a really good topsoil, you know, get everything kind of leveled out. You have to really be careful where you pick up topsoil. Before you know it, all of a sudden, you might find yourself with a lot of weeds in there, more so than whatever it is that you sow grass seed wise. Yeah. You know, a lot of times when you pick up topsoil and it's inexpensive and you like that, $11 one-yard bucket of topsoil, it's going to be $11 worth of topsoil because it's going to have a lot of weed seed in it. And one of my favorite places to go to is Hafner's and Sons over here in Cincinnati. You know, wherever it is that you go, convey to them what you're doing, and you don't want anything loaded with a lot of weed seed. You want some good quality topsoil.
Okay.
That really comes into play. You know, Margie has some really nice topsoil up there at Bushman Supply. You know, I'm just, you know, I don't want to forget Margie either. Might be a little bit of a drive for you, but that's of the essence. And just go ahead, get things kind of, you know, leveled out and so forth. Then go ahead and sow grass seed. I would recommend using a seed starter fertilizer.
Okay.
Put that down. As soon as you get everything graded and leveled off, apply your fertilizer first. Then sow your grass seed. Are you planning on using straw?
Planned on it. Yeah,
okay. When you apply the straw, I want you to apply it at about a 40-50% coverage ratio. I want you to be able to see soil when you look down. That's of the essence. You need air to get to that soil surface. You need, you know, the sunlight to get to it, and you'll water that every day until it starts breaking dormancy.
Perfect. And then just to get back to, I guess, the start of it, do I need to rough up that bottom layer of grass? Do I till it up, rake it up, or do I just put the top right over top of it? What's the best way to go about that?
You know, if it's mounded or rutted in any way, yeah, I would loosen it up a little bit to make that, you know, grading go a lot smoother.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it sounds like you pretty well have it mapped out and you know what you're facing and what you need to do. So let us know how it goes. What do you think, Bob?
Yeah,
anything
I think
you want to add to it?
If it's really compacted, sometimes help loosening it up.
Yeah.
That definitely help a little bit. If
or
they've
drainage.
Had like bobcats or anything, just compacting the soil all the way around. Because if you just throw grass seed on top of that, it's just going to move and it's not going to root in and won't have any luck. So I think everything Tony said, you just follow that advice, water it pretty much every day till it starts to break and then kind of wean it off slowly. You'll have really good grass because now's a great time to do it.
Perfect. Well, I really appreciate it.
All right, Ron. Have a good weekend.
Calling in next week or the week after. I listen to you guys every weekend.
Thank you.
Let us know how it goes, too.
Yep.
Take care, guys.
Take care. Yeah, great question. You know, a lot of people are trying to get things reestablished. You know, I've even dealt with sinkholes before in my own yard.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, those things occur. I've seen where people have taken sinkholes and they'll just kind of, they'll take a spade and cut like a cross.
Mm-hmm. Clean it out.
And they'll peel the grass back a little bit, put some soil underneath it, and just fold it back over.
Yeah, I've seen people take a sod cutter. You know, you can rent those.
There you go.
Cut the sod. If the turf's still good, but it's low, cut the turf, bring in the soil. Get it to the right level and put the sod right back out after you cut it. Works pretty good.
That it does. And having said all that, talked about that, our good friend Steve Foltz from the Cincinnati Zoo's Botanical Gardens is here with us. Steve, good morning. You're hard to pin down. You're hard to get in. You're a busy, busy guy, and I know you are this time of year, and thank you for getting back with us.
Well, thanks, Tony. Thanks for inviting me. This is a lot of fun.
But tell everybody I had to bribe you with chicken wings and a couple cold beers.
It didn't take much bribing, did it?
No, not at all. So, you know, what's going on at the zoo? You guys are gearing up. I know you had the zoo blooms going on and the blooms and tunes, right?
Right.
Tell us what's happening.
So April's our big bloom month. We are in full bloom right now. Our tulips are peak. And this is going to be the best week of blooms at the zoo. So I encourage if you're thinking about going to the zoo right now, now's the time to come because we are literally at peak bloom. And we have over 110,000 tulips.
Wow.
That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah, how many tulips did you plant?
That is so neat.
And you plant those every year, correct?
Every year. Yeah, every year. We put a fresh batch of tulips in so we get a great show. It's just amazing right now. So.
And it's all colors, right? Kind of mix them?
Yeah, yellows and, you know, there's all kinds of pinks and orange and just a wonderful display.
You don't have any deer issues over there, do you?
No, we're all fenced in. We're fenced in. That's why you can come enjoy our tulips and yours are probably eating right now. So.
Oh, I'll tell you what, deer, that's like a steak sandwich for a lot of deer. They love the tulips. You know, nothing more beautiful than tulips when you just see a drift or a sea of one color and how it just meanders with curved beds.
110,000. Let's reiterate that. 110,000 bulbs.
Amazing. What would that be if you got a dime for every bulb you planted?
I could say, let's just say it's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah.
It took us about 3 to 4 weeks to get them in the ground. And a lot of volunteer help, a lot of hard work by our great staff. And it's not just the tulips. We've got, I heard you guys talking about the flowering dogwoods earlier, and those are just starting to come into to bloom. And, you know, we've got some great displays of dogwoods, many different cultivars out there. You know, Spring Grove has got to be one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah, yes. Spring Grove. Yeah, absolutely.
We've got, you know, the cherries are just going out of bloom. Mm-hmm. Boy, the bees on some of those Yoshino cherries this year, they was crazy. They were a really good bee attractor. And now we're going into red buds. And, the mags are still, some of the little girls are still hanging in there.
Mm-hmm, they are.
And the viburnums have just popped.
Oh, yeah.
We're in the urban heat island, so we're probably a little earlier than most people out on the suburbs. So, we start earlier, and Judd viburnums and Mohawks are in full bloom right now.
Great fragrance.
Inevitably, every year this time, people will come into the garden center. I see this blooming. It's very fragrant. What is it?
And I don't think people realize the zoo, and that's why I was so excited when I heard you were coming in. I think still a lot of people don't realize how much the zoo offers. They just think of animals. I mean, honestly, that's kind of, I think, where a lot of people go. And our zoo, it just does an amazing job planting 110,000 bulbs for you to go love and see. I mean, where else are you going to see that?
Oh, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Because what else that you guys do, if you go out to your website, is that you have a lot of information that people can print for various things, some of your favorite annuals that you guys work with every year. I know that changes up a little bit. The perennials, now the zoo's program with the pollinators, it's, what, 2 or 3, 4 years old now?
Yeah.
It's starting to ramp up and take off.
We're breathing new life into that program. It's unbelievable. We've got a little pocket guide now. It's called the Zoo's Best Plants for Pollinators. And it's a little pocket guide you can take with you to the local nurseries. And it has all the different plants you can plant for pollinators on the spring, the summer, and the fall to keep that whole pollinator thing going. We've teamed up with all the local nurseries, and, what we're trying to do is just get people to take the pollinator challenge, and that's plant just 1, 2, 3 plants, more pollinator plants for the pollinators out there.
Right.
It's pretty simple. You can get a nice container on your deck. You can do a beautiful big pollinator garden. Anywhere in between. And, and we're going to be, this is a big kickoff this year for the program, and we're going to be hitting it hard.
I think I need to get registered with you because We do sell the pollinator program, and a lot of people support that.
Yeah,
the zoo logo's on the container and so forth. And I think when I know that a lot of moms come in and they'll have strollers or the little kids with them, and they're putting emphasis on, hey, we're supporting a local entity, the Cincinnati Zoo and the Botanical Gardens. And it's a fever. You have to catch it.
Yeah,
it is.
But
it's contagious.
Easy for anybody to participate. I mean, because it's, you think of pollinators, a lot of times we just go to flowers, you know, and only flowering perennials. I mean, trees, shrubs, evergreens, vines, annuals, perennials. There's so much out there.
Yeah, you put in just one good oak tree in your yard, and you know, oaks are host to about 400 to 500 different insects that then the birds come in and feed off the insects, and that's what feeds their young. And I mean, it's just a whole mini ecosystem in an oak tree.
That it is, permaculture at its best with all this kind of stuff. Hang on to that thought. We have to take another quick break. In and around the house, I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and our special guest, Steve Foltz from the Cincinnati Zoo's Botanical Gardens, is with us. And we're going to continue our conversation throughout the rest of the program this morning, all the way up to the 9 o'clock hour, talking about choosing the best plants, pollinators, annuals, perennials, and things that you can expect to see at the Cincinnati Zoo. We'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. And the sun's, you know, it's peeking out there a little bit. A little light cloud cover. It's not going to be that bad of a day. Around 70 degrees, I'll take that. And, you know, it's a wonderful weekend to get out and do some things in the landscape or in the garden beds. You can certainly take a ride over to the zoo with the little ones and check out the zoo blooms. All the tulips we were just talking about a moment ago, we're here with Steve Foltz, our special guest from the Cincinnati Zoo's Botanical Gardens. And this is just a great weekend to get out to some of the local garden centers, see what's new, see what's arriving, all that good stuff, because things are in bloom. There's a lot of color. And if that doesn't get you excited about this upcoming season, I don't know how else better to do it. You agree, Bob? What do you think?
I mean, even at our garden center today, we got our customer appreciation.
That's right.
Going on.
Oh, yeah. So, tell us a little about that real quick.
So we teamed up with Mike Peterman from Queen City Propane, and you can get your gas grill tanks filled for $10. If you purchase something from our garden center, we'll cover $3 of that, and you can get them filled up for $7. And Mike's he's got the grill already ready. I think he's got some hot dogs getting on, and then we've got some snacks to have, and you know, it's just, there'll be a few specials throughout the garden center. So we're kind of excited. So, and who doesn't like to grill? And Scott, I know you know Tony. He loves to eat. So that is right up his alley.
Well, I eat a lot less. It's portion control, I found out.
Not when you're on the grill. I've seen you eat when the stuff's off the grill.
Oh, no, it's portion control.
You're like a grazer. You just sort of show up, take a little bit, come back, take a little more, come back, take a little more.
It's all right, Bob.
That's the way you are.
Just, you know, a little bit at a time. That's how you eat an elephant, one bite at a time. So if it's a big piece of meat, I'm coming back for more.
There you go.
Yeah. So, you know, Steve, we were talking about our plant, What Am I? And it was the yellow blooming magnolia. You looked at it. You seem to think it's Elizabeth.
Yeah, it looks like Elizabeth to me.
And reason being is because you got a better trained eye from looking at things like that from a distance or a photo.
Well, there's a couple pretty good sized magnolias, and Elizabeth is probably one of the earliest one that came. And as big as that is, it's got a little softer yellow, a little larger bloom than say butterflies.
Got it.
Which would be a little deeper yellow and a little smaller bloom.
Yeah, there were some people on Facebook saying that the yellows were a little different, you know, different hue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. And they're just so many good plants. And when you see a tree like that, that makes you stop. Mm-hmm. It's really neat. That's great.
You know, I have to ask you, I was planting a tree for somebody yesterday, and I was right down there on Levasseur Avenue, and behind the house, the customer where I was doing this, who I was doing this for, she said, Tony, I want you to see this tree that's in my next-door neighbor's backyard. And, Steve, it was huge, and it's in between 26th Street and Levasseur, and she said there's an arborist company that comes in all the time annually and takes care of this tree and looks after it. And what I could tell is by the seeds, to me, it looked like an elm. And I don't know, it's got to be, she had told me that when she moved into this house, the lady I was planting the tree for, she said the lady that she bought the home from was 76 years old. And she had said, the lady that was 76, that her dad planted that tree when he was a young boy.
Oh, wow.
So are there still any American elms that are still around that were not afflicted by the Dutch elm disease by any chance?
Yeah. Yeah.
So to me, when I looked this up, it looked like it was an American elm. Are you familiar with where I'm talking about?
I'm not, but I wrote the address down, so I'm going to go look at it now.
It's right behind, you can see, it's right behind 15 Levasseur. So as soon as you turn on Levasseur, this tree, I have a picture of it on my cell phone. I'll show it to you. It was incredible.
Didn't you say the trunk was huge?
It was.
How big around do you think it was?
Hey, Steve's ears perked up. His eyes got real wide open. He loves this kind of stuff.
It's like you with bugs.
Yeah,
you're the same way with bugs.
I do. I like insects. It's a totally different world. But I thought I would ask you that. This tree is just incredible. So you might want to check that one out.
Yeah, sounds good.
It wasn't until she pointed it out to me and had said that I was like, wow, I didn't even know.
There's trees all over. Every community has just cool trees. And that brings me to one of our programs we're working on, our legacy tree program. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Is that something?
That's beautiful.
Send that to Alex so he can put it on the Facebook page.
That is good.
Tony, so everybody else can join in.
Yeah. I'll do that, but it was just caught my... When she pointed that out, I was like, whoa.
Because that's what's unique about the greater Cincinnati area is where we have all these tiny communities that we all take pride in. And in every tiny community, there is just spectacular trees floating around.
Mm-hmm.
And that you walk by downtown Covington near Main Strauss. There is one of the most beautiful dawn redwoods I've ever seen. You can drive on the cut of the hill and look to your left as you're going up to or down south to Kentucky, and it's just this big pyramidal tree sticking out above all the other trees in the area. And you wonder, who planted that and how long ago was that?
Right.
It's just really some cool stuff. And, there's another there's a big sycamore down there in Covington mm-hmm. as well. And, so one of the programs we're working on is trying to find some of these really unique trees and collecting seed off them and growing the seed on and then being able to, give back those trees to the community.
Right.
And so that's a program that we're starting this year at the zoo. And it's going to be a while. It takes a long time for the trees and seeds to grow and collect them and get them at the right time. And but those are the things that, make our job fun and make the communities just, such a special place.
Yeah, and when I saw that tree, I was just awestruck. It's like, wow.
It just goes back to some of the stories, like the lady was telling you about,
her
dad planted this.
We're going
back into the 1800s. So how old is the tree? And, just sometimes those special trees you're talking about, Steve, there's such a history. And the backstory is just as fabulous as the tree itself.
And that's why we start planting trees today. I mean,
exactly right.
Everyone's got a story behind mm-hmm. a tree. I mean, it's, your friend gave you this tree or you planted this tree for your son or daughter when they were born. And it's just a great way to, start things off.
Right.
And you're helping the pollinators and you're helping the community and you're helping the cooling the urban heat island. And
mm-hmm.
there's so many good things that come out of that.
I think I'm seeing a little bit of an uptick with trees this year. A lot of people are looking at trees. There for a while, it's like, everyone was buying small things, things that, would just give you color only. But I think people are really taking an interest in trees, and especially, we've lost a lot of ash trees. And with yesterday's windstorm, that just blew through here briefly. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a lot of trees that went down, especially those dead ash trees.
Yep.
That's becoming more and more dangerous there.
And when's the best time to plant a tree?
10 years ago.
10 years ago. There you go. I was wondering if you knew that.
50 years ago.
Yeah, plant it. I mean, and when's the best time to plant a tree? It's right now. If you've got a space for it, plant a tree. It's just great for the environment. I mean, you can use them for shade. If we don't even talk about the pollination and all the other good stuff, you can use them for shade, shading the house, shading mm-hmm. the lawn, beauty. There's so many things besides that are great, but then you throw in the environmental side of it too, and it's just great for the community.
It is.
And there's been a lot of research is starting to be done by, there's a cardiologist in Louisville, Kentucky, that's working on a project that, he's literally pointing out that if you have trees in your area, that you're actually going to live longer and have less disease and less problems with your health. And that's a big deal.
That's huge.
So, you know, those are things that, you know, I don't think people have quite associated.
No, there's a great deal of value with trees all the way around. I mean, they're huge living people with feelings. You know, I don't know if you just recently caught an article that was published not long ago about trees have a heartbeat. They seem to think they get things flowing and so forth, and how some trees will share nutrients with other trees via the root system, especially the beech tree. There's so many things we very little we know about trees, how they communicate.
I got a question for Steve. We're talking about these trees, and you've been at the zoo for how many years?
30 years.
30 years. So are there any trees that you planted when you were first getting to the zoo that might you still remember working on that are big, giant trees now?
Oh,
is there a favorite?
Definitely. Well, we have one that's a cat syrup called Amazing Grace.
Uh-huh.
And it is just spectacular. It is a nice weeping tree that I think it was probably 15, 20 years ago that we planted it. And, you know, now you look at it and, you know, it's just, wow. You know, it's...
You planted it then, it was small.
Yeah.
And now you're like, wow.
It's kind of a, you know, a little thing and you don't think much of it.
Uh-huh.
And the years kind of fly by and next thing you know, you know, there's, you know, beautiful oak trees and, I mean, yeah, that's part of the fun part of my job is, you know, I get to stay and see the trees, whereas you guys have to go to other places and plant and you...
But it is fun going back and seeing some of the things that, you know, even when I used to run the crew before my brother does all that now, you know, and I'll go back and I'll see something I planted 25 years ago. And, you know, you planted this little magnolia, maybe a little Dr. Merrill magnolia that's 4 or 5 feet tall 30 years, you know, ago, it was tiny. Now it's, you look at it, you go, good night. That thing's huge.
Yeah.
And it just grows so fast.
Yeah.
That's fun to see.
And, you know, there's so much gratification there. It's just, it makes you glow inside when you see things like that. It really does.
Absolutely.
Hold on to that thought because we still have a lot of ground to cover and we're kind of nerdy. We start talking about all kinds of things when it comes to plants and that's just in our blood. I'm sorry. But if you have any questions you want to ask Steve or anything about the zoos, botanical gardens and so forth, feel free to chime in and participate. And that's 859-513-749-B105. And we got to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Steve and about things that are going on at the Cincinnati Zoo's Botanical Garden. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard and our guest today is Steve Foltz, well-known throughout the tri-state area and has been with the zoo for 30 years. I didn't realize it's been 30 years and where that time goes is beyond me. I remember meeting you for the first time a long, long time ago up at the OFA show. We were sitting down with some people. I had never met you, but I think that I'm gonna go back a little time. You weren't long out of the Hort program at UK. Did you start at the zoo right after you got out of?
I actually started at Delhi Garden Center.
At Delhi.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm a Delhi graduate.
Yeah.
There are a lot of you out there and about.
Oh, you better believe it.
West Side.
No, I better not say that.
I knew what you were going to say.
But, you know, Bob Maddox and the folks at Delhi, they were just phenomenal. I think they gave a lot of young kids, young horticulturists, good starts, and were very appreciative of our Delhi days.
You know, a lot of people speak very highly of Bob Maddox. And, you know, even Darlene Cooper said that he was really big on you learning and learning the industry and the trade and really put a lot of emphasis on training and education. And a lot of people have said that I've run across.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Porter, who was a former Delhi employee, is with us. And it's been a wonderful addition to our staff. And it's just, I learn something every day. And people like yourself and Tim and others and Darlene, that's what this industry's about. It's sharing all that knowledge and all the interesting tidbits, and you just can't get enough of it.
And I'm not sure people understand how close-knit the horticulture community is in the greater Cincinnati area. And, you know, we're all friends. We all know each other. We all share information. That's unheard of, I guess, in other, you know, businesses. But horticulture's, unique.
It is. It's a passion. And, you know, actually, I have an IT background, but I kind of came onto the scene later in life. And having been around it, I didn't want anything to do with it when I was a youngster. But it's like, oh, man, I feel like I missed out in those earlier years. And but it's just it's been a wonderful experience for me meeting people like yourself. And real quick, we have Sue with us on the line. Sue, good morning. How are you?
Fine.
Good. What can we help you with? What's going on?
Okay. I bought some Monsella tulips from Breck's last year and planted them. They are blooming. However, the stems are very short. I don't know why. They're little. They're not real tall like you see at the zoo. And I'm thinking, okay, if they turn out, you know, I just bought the one pack of 8 bulbs last year. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm not going to go overboard. I'm going to try one. And if I like them and everything, then I'll may buy more this year.
When did you plant those in the fall, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the time you should plant them. And go ahead, Steve, chime in.
Are they just starting to bloom now?
Yes.
Yeah, because some
they're open.
Yeah, sometimes it's really interesting with tulip bulbs. You know, a lot of them they open, they get small, and then as they, you know, keep growing in the next 2 weeks, they get taller and bigger. And I don't know if that'll be the case for yours, but it's really fun to watch at the zoo. You know, you think they're in full bloom, then all of a sudden they start getting taller and bigger and more beautiful. And but it's really nice. I love Monsella. That's a great choice.
I saw them at the zoo. We went 1 year, and I says, I've got to get those for my yard.
Yeah, they are beautiful. Well, thanks for coming to the zoo and seeing all the beautiful flowers. We appreciate that.
Does planting depth, Steve, you think have anything to do with them being a little shorter, a little taller?
Sometimes we notice if we get a lot of compaction on the edges of beds where people walk in the winter for our light show, it does compact the soil and it makes it a little harder for them to get up. So sometimes the compacted hard soil is a little bit. We only go about 3 to 4 inches in depth, and so we don't dig them down very deep.
You know, fertilization I find sometimes is very important too, especially with that early root development during the fall season. You know, that's when it's getting most of that because the soil temperatures are still warm, although the outside ambient temperatures, the air temperatures are cooler. And, you know, sometimes maybe fertility might come into play a little bit. Do you guys use anything as you plant or
we don't. We, you know, our bulbs are, you know, pretty good size and pretty good quality going in. And our beds are all tilled. So
loose.
it's all good loose soil. So to your point on compaction and tight soils, that will.
And you just said something else too. The size of the bulbs, that's important too. Not all bulbs are created equal.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, some of those mail order bulbs that you end up buying and purchasing, they are a lot smaller. So of course the plant's going to be not as big as a bulb that's more developed and mature.
Yeah. And for Sue, probably the best thing to do is just sit tight. See what happens at this point, you know, and if for some reason you're still having problems, you know, maybe if you planted them 6-7 inches deep, that could have something to do with it. You may have to do a little adjustment, but let it go completely dormant. And then if you have to, then you can make some adjustments later on if you need to.
And Sue, what else is very important too, is to allow those to gradually die back before you cut that top foliage. You know, because what's happening is a lot of that energy is coming back out of the foliage and it's working its way downward back into the bulb and rejuvenating it.
Okay.
So be patient with that. A lot of times people, and I know you just planted yours last fall, but a lot of times people, they kind of jump the gun and they want to go ahead and mow down the foliage and plant other things. But we need to let those gradually die back.
Okay. And another question. Okay, the tulips at the zoo are nice and tall. What week do you plant those at the zoo? So if I wanted the same effect in my yard, you know, for them to be that tall, like right now, do you plant them in September?
We actually wait till about late October. And
So...
We're our annuals are still in the ground, and then once the annuals freeze down and they're done, we come in, till the beds up again, and then put the bulbs in about October.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, Sue, great question. Have a wonderful weekend, and if you get an opportunity, go back over there to the zoo and take in those tulips and all those nice, beautiful blooms. And that's contagious.
Oh,
I know. We plan on going tomorrow.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, thanks for listening and have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, people love tulips. I love tulips.
Well,
a lot
great,
of times.
Great example of the zoo.
Yep.
That's exactly why, you got it's there. She saw the bulb that
Steve's
she wanted.
Doing
she
his
got
job
some,
for us in
and
the
then
retail
she's
world.
Trying. And one thing Sue has to remember, though, the zoo's climate is definitely could be completely different than hers. So you may have bulbs up, like you said. You're kind of in the city where it could be a little warmer. Kind of get the bulbs going a little faster, possibly. Yeah, she's out where, or she's in an area where it's much cooler, or she's planted them more in a shadier spot. That's going to make a big difference in that.
Yeah. I want to get back to the pollinator series that you guys are so actively involved with now at the Cincinnati Zoo. And we have local people growing these in the tri-state area for retail to sell to the wholesale to other garden centers. And it's a great gig, so to speak, for lack of a better term, how everybody collectively gets together. And you guys have really put a lot of time into this. And I know Scott has as well. What are some of your favorite annuals at this point in this pollinator series?
Boy,
do you have any? Just one or two?
If I had one plant to plant, it would probably be the salvia. Blue salvia, every time. We had a Mystic Spires improved group of salvia last year, and there wasn't a day that there weren't bees on that. Even in the rain, the bees were on that. It was so good. But if you had just one plant, I'd go salvia. The blues, any of the blues, rhythm and blues, they were all fantastic.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with the salvias. And even the black and blue and the black and bloom. Mm-hmm. Hummingbirds love that plant. They just, there's so much value to that plant in the garden.
It's a good one.
And the bees are so busy all over it, they're not going to even bother you. They're all over the flowers. They're just having a great time.
Good point that you brought that up. I try to convey that to people all the time in the nursery of the garden center. When they see bees on things, especially outside, it's like, oh no. And I'm like, you could carry that up to the front counter. They'll stay on that plant. They will not bother you.
Right. Unless you go in there and bother them
right. And
they feel like that you're attacking them. That's the only way.
We've had, there was a great time last year where we had a girl about 4 or 5 years old. And she went up to one of the bees that were on the plants, and she was trying to pet the bee that was on the flower.
How cute.
No fear. And again, bees, the bees that are on the flowers, they're not the yellow jackets that are, in the end of the season, that everyone's afraid of.
Aggravated by the heat, swarming,
right.
Daring you to get by the plant. No,
right.
They're pretty docile.
Yeah,
they're very gentle.
Honeybees and all our native pollinators and native bees. I've never been stung by one.
Well, hold on to that thought, because we were talking salvia, and I want to ask you about the skyscraper series, because it looks like to me this is on your list, and I think it's rather new as well. 749-B105, in and around the house. I am Tony Works with Bob Bard and our guest Steve Foltz from the Cincinnati Zoo, and we're going to continue our discussion about the pollinator series that you'll find at your local garden centers throughout the tri-state area. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and our friend Steve Foltz is here from the Cincinnati Zoo. And we're talking about the pollinator series that has been out for a couple of years, and the zoo just keeps growing this series. And it's got everybody involved in the tri-state area, and a lot of us who have garden centers, we're on board, and we participate with this program. And part of the sales, some of the proceeds, they go to support the zoo's botanical gardens. And I can't think of a better way to support the zoo. And most definitely, when we're there with the little ones and so forth, do we not have a good time? It's just a beautiful place to be.
You take little ones?
Well, I don't have any kids, but, you know, I'm just speaking for others who
okay.
do.
All right. I was just wondering. No, I thought maybe you hadn't told me something, you know, since we've been hanging out every Saturday.
Thanks, Bob. I don't have any little ones that I know of, and I think I'm pretty well in the clear. Thank you, by the way. So we were talking about various salvias because, I mean, salvias have taken center stage, I think, just along with some of the begonias mm-hmm. in recent years. And I just noticed in the pollinator series, talking about some of the annuals, that you had a skyscraper series there, or one of those that's called orange. And I just understand that this particular salvia has larger blooms, more of a prolific bloomer, pretty sturdy upright growth habit. And you guys are always testing that stuff.
And that's the big part of what we do is just trial all as many new plants as possible. What's unique about the program, and this started in 2002, our trials program. I know Bard's Nursery was a big part of it early on, and as well as all the local flower growers. And we've Ohio State Extension and Hamilton County, Joe Boggs and Julie Crook have been involved with it from day one. And it really is, you know, our job is to put as many out, label them, take good care of them. You know, we don't do anything special. You know, obviously you try to work your bed up and you water when it needs water. You mm-hmm. fertilize a couple times. You know, we're not, you know, doing anything different than anyone should be doing at their home. And then, you know, the big thing is we've got everybody involved. The big nurseries from all around, you know, that grow and breed these product and annuals, we test those. They actually donate that to the zoo. We test them out, and then we work with all the local flower growers that, mm-hmm. You know, have a vested interest in this. And the goal is to make the homeowner more successful. Mm-hmm. Right. That's the main line.
That's a wonderful program.
There's so many times that you see, well, you know, I just have a brown thumb. And you say, well, what are you planting? And they name a couple plants, and you're like, yeah, I'd have a brown thumb if I planted that too.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Not everything. Yeah, it's trialing and really testing things. And you guys, you don't just do it for one growing season. Don't you kind of involve this for 2 or 3 years so that particular plant, we know it gets a good dose of our Cincinnati weather?
Yeah. We've had plants in our trials for 5-7 years sometimes, and a lot of it is you know, we'll have 30 days over 90, and some years we won't have any days over 90.
Right.
So you wet years, dry years, you know, so you do have to trial them more than just that one time.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think overall we have from 2002 to 2018 our plants that on the list on the zoo's website, all the ones that have won. And we go through about 200 to 300 different varieties a year, and we pick the best 10, 11 out of that each year. So if you go through that list from 2002 to now, that's a pretty solid list of annuals
it
that
is.
You're going to be successful with.
Does it get tough to kind of take one off the list and add a new one? And where it doesn't get forgotten about, you know, because Bob and I have had discussions before about various plants, and it's almost like it could be a tagline, like, where are they today? Where are they now? Yeah. Almost like a rock band from the 60s. Where are they now?
Right.
And sometimes some of those good old plants, it's like, wow, we forgot about these guys.
Yes.
And sometimes they kind of, they're not available anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, because there's newer varieties coming out that look similar, but they're more improved.
Mm-hmm.
So annuals, you just have to keep moving forward with the new varieties, and you know, and that's part of the fun. As long as you're in within the same kind of series, you're in good shape. You know, lantanas are always going to be great.
There
plants.
You go. He's speaking my language.
That's one of my favorites.
It
yeah,
is.
And a great pollinator.
And there's
too.
Some new varieties that are just gorgeous.
Yeah, they are. Well, hold on to that thought. We'll talk about some lantanas when we come out of the break. And I also want to ask you about the sun patient. That's one of my favorites, too. And I like that one called Electric Orange. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. And we're still going to continue our discussion with Steve Foltz from the Cincinnati Zoo's Botanical Gardens. We'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and we're still with our friend Steve Foltz from the Cincinnati Zoo's Botanical Gardens. And before we go a little further here and talking about things over at the zoo and what's going on, I want to say our hearts go out to the Schwab family. Yeah. Our industry's lost another well-respected, fine gentleman, Clem Schwab, the other day. Clem passed away, and I will say this. I did not know Clem very well personally, but when I did have, you know, when I was around Clem and had met Clem, he was very inspirational to me in my early days here on the program. Clem would call me occasionally and just wish me well and talk with me and always treat me with respect. So our hearts go out to the Schwab family.
Thoughts and prayers to him. And he touched so many people in this industry that,
absolutely.
I mean, his roots are spread so far, there's no way to keep track of how much that man did. And you know what? You've said it before. He's kind of the godfather of Fertilome.
Well, you know, he was the one who brought Fertilome into the Cincinnati area. Mm-hmm. You know, he told me that back in the 60s. And, you know, Clem, just a great guy. He'll be well missed. And, you know, last year we lost a couple well-respected gentlemen over in northern Kentucky, Earl Baton, and over there on the west side of Cincinnati in Delhi, George Robin. So, you know, when we lose guys like this, you know, who have all this experience and knowledge, you know, our hearts ache. So, Clem, rest in peace, buddy. But I just want to say
that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Definitely. So, on to something more blooming and nicer, topic-wise, you know, zoo blooms. And we're talking about some pollinators and so forth. And you mentioned Lantana. What are some of your favorite varieties of Lantana?
Well, I tell you, Lucky Pot of Gold is mm-hmm. one of my favorites. You know, they're the old, you know, some of the older varieties. Although Citrus Marmalade is another good. Mm-hmm. They're just, I don't know that I've met a Lantana that I didn't like.
Well, if you want easy when it comes to annuals and pollinators and you got a real dry area and you're probably not going to water the way you're supposed to, you're going to have really good luck with Lantana. But also, Lantana, at least at our store, we sell out quick. And I can't keep it in. So if you want Lantana, I'm going to suggest get to your local independent garden centers, get your Lantana, and take care of it if you have to. Slide it in and out while it's cold. But Lantana is a good one. And it can handle a little cooler temperatures anyways.
And I want to add something to it. If you can find a Lantana tree form at a garden center or nursery, grab it and put that in a pot, a nice size pot. So you'll have this tree-form Lantana plant, and you can plant down low underneath it with other kind of fillers and spillers. You will have one beautiful, you know, like mixed container, I'm telling you. And if you see a Lantana tree-form at a local garden center or nursery, and it may not be in full bloom, I will tell you this, it will bloom its head off for you. Pick it up, and if you have some problems with it, call and you can give me the business.
You plant it,
but
in shade,
you won't be disappointed.
Only if you plant it,
don't
in shade.
Plant it in shade.
It likes it hot and sunny.
If you ever, I love the tree forms.
Oh, we haven't done the tree forms, but now that you're talking about it, it would make for a great pollinator container.
Oh, it was incredible. One day I was just at home out on a deck, and I was off. And I just looked over and I saw the hummingbird moth on it. I saw bees all over it. Hummingbirds. I mean, everybody was there hanging out. It was like a local sports pub for these insects. They were just hanging out, man, playing ball.
I love it.
Yeah, it was great. I'll get one for you, Steve. I'll do my best. I have to get a hold of Bill over at Tropical Foliage.
There you go. And so, yeah, I mean, there's so many great annuals and then not to forget perennials and shrubs, too.
There's not enough time. I mean,
I know.
Can we stay for like another 4 or 5 hours?
No, but you and I are really planning on honing in on a lot of different annuals and perennials, you know, especially over the next couple months. I know Tony and I have some big plans, so definitely want to tune in every Saturday to check in because we've got a lot to talk about.
Here's what I want to conclude today's show with this question. It's something that I think it kind of transpired back in 2012, and that was downy mildew on impatiens.
Mm-hmm.
And when that occurred, boy, it wiped out everything. It just took the wind out of our sails. And then all of a sudden, what came to the forefront are begonias. I mean, begonias have they not just like taken over center stage?
Yeah, especially in that same type area, you know,
right.
Kind of partial shade. A lot of the bigger begonias, the Whopper series.
The Whoppers.
And, you know, the Angel Wing and Dragon Wings. And,
yeah, the Dragon Wings.
They're great.
Do you have the new one? I think it's called Canary Yellow. dragon wing. Do you guys, are you going to have that over at the zoo?
We had some containers last year.
How did they do?
Beautiful.
Really? Beautiful. A little bit more shade?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Can't afternoon go wrong with shade. A begonia. And, easy. Begonias are easy.
Yeah. Keep that in mind.
And I know you're talking in patients. We had the downy mildew on the regular in patients, but the sun patients, you know, that's what we switched to. And, you know, they don't get the downy mildew. And like you said, sun patients, electric, compact electric orange. That was my all-time favorite.
It's stellar. It just, when you come up the street, we'll plant those out front. They just glow.
It is beautiful.
They do. Man, I don't know where the 3 hours went this morning. We need another three just to hang out with you, Steve, and we would love to have you back. And I know our audience, they would love to hear more about what's going on over at the Cincinnati Zoo's Botanical Gardens. Kudos to you and your staff. Tell Scott and everybody we said hi. You do a wonderful job. Check out the Zoo Blooms and Zoo Blooms and Tunes. That's another gig that you guys put on over there. Next Saturday, join Bob and I. We'll be back here at the same time, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Have a wonderful weekend.
At Giant Eagle, you may have spotted the Stacker. With uncanny MyPerks ability, she stacks up the perks to choose either dollars off or up to 20% off her entire grocery bill. The Stacker, stacking up huge savings with MyPerks. Find your MyPersonality and transform your shopping into free gas and groceries. Full details at GiantEagle.com/MyPerks. Perks cannot be earned or redeemed on select items. Restrictions apply.